All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. It's Wednesday. We are not doing Wild Card Wednesday this morning. Dan's taking some time off, so he's off this morning, and Ben will be filling in. So we're just going to do generic bumps. 312-981-7200, phone number for talk and text. Coming up on the show after the 1:30 news, we'll have Ron Henderson on with us. He's a great guy, personal trainer for well over 30 years. He's written several books on the subject, and he has a new program that he's launching called Self Stage. And he shares lessons that he's learned that you can apply to business leaders and more. He's got a very inspiring story. He's in his 60s, and he's in the best shape that anybody could be in. And he has inspired so many people. So we're going to talk to the fitness king himself, Ron Henderson. That'll be after the 1:30 news. We are also going to talk about how some actors who nearly played some iconic roles. So you think of these iconic roles that are associated with certain actors and actresses, but other actors and actresses either were up for that role or turned it down. And some of them you can't imagine. A lot of them you can't imagine any other actor. These are like really iconic roles, and you can't imagine any other actor or actress playing them. And then we're going to talk about some of the actors and actresses who almost played those roles. Also, we're going to talk about crazy fads from the past few decades. There's so many of them existing, and sometimes they last like about a month. You know, sometimes they last longer, but there are a lot of them. So we're going to talk about fads, and I want to talk to you guys about what fads you guys participated in that you enjoyed, or maybe just it didn't enjoy, but just did anyway because everybody else was doing them. So crazy fads, actors who nearly played iconic roles, that's all coming up. Blackhawks, their winning streak stopped at 7. They lost against the Bruins last night, but we have Blackhawks Express to play back, and we will do that on the show as well. And again, anytime you want to talk or text, it's 312-981-7200. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that, at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, too, at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And, of course, you can download our podcasts. Every second of every show is podcast. And you can download it. You can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to the Nick D Show. It's automatically sent to your device. It's free, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. Those are the ways you can listen to us and contact us. And that's what's coming up on this Wednesday morning show. So let me say hello to Ben. Ben Anderson, who is filling in for Dan. Ben, how are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's good. Good morning so far.
It's going to be fun. We're going to have a fun time.
I'm excited for fads.
Yeah. Well, everybody goes through that, you know, through them. And there's a ton of them for each decade. And I want to go through some of them. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And which ones do you guys remember? Which ones did you guys participate in? Which ones were fun and which ones were just dumb?
I would say I want to know the ones people are trying to forget.
Well, I can give you one really quickly since there are so many for every decade. This, of course, was from the 70s. Which, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about how weird the 70s were.
Uh-huh.
I spent a lot of time talking about how weird it was to grow up in the 70s a lot. But the pet rock is one of the dumbest one of the dumbest fads in the history of all fads. And I had one. So that's how this is the pet rock. And whoever came up with the idea for the pet rock is a genius because
not a dumb guy.
No. And he probably made a ton of cash. I'm sure that we can find out who the guy was who invented the pet rock and what happened to him. But this is a guy who would put a rock in a box and then you sell it. That's what that was. It was a pet. You would have a pet rock, and that is one of the dumbest fads ever. And of course, it took place in the 70s. Where? What other decade would that take place? So that's what's coming up a little bit later on, and Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you?
Doing very well.
Good, good, good. Yeah, it's going to be weird when we talk about these iconic roles, because trying to picture a different actor or actress in these roles is so strange, you know, because these roles are so identified with these specific actors and actresses. Then we'll talk about these and try to picture them. And if you guys know of any of these, call us up a little bit later on at 312-981-7200. A couple of quick stories here. And then, you know our buddy Tom Appel, who is our regular, he's with Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's our car guy. We have him on once a month to talk about car news and answer questions for people in the automotive questions. Well, one of our listeners is a guy named Doc. Doc is about to hit, or he did hit, a million miles on his Civic.
Oh, I thought you were going to say DeLorean.
No, on his Civic. Well, it's amazing on any car. When Tom found out that one of our listeners, a guy named Doc, was about to hit a million miles on his Civic, he contacted Doc and wrote a story about it. And I have the story. It's been published. It's at the Consumer Guide Automotive, the Daily Drive blog. And so, and he drives a lot. Clearly, he drives a lot. Clearly, Doc drives a lot. Doc's a regular listener of the show. We love Doc. He calls in pretty regularly, contributes via text as well. And so I love the fact that Tom, one of our listeners, approached a million miles on his Honda Civic. And so he did a profile on Doc and his Civic, which you can see right now at consumerguide.com. And I'll do a follow-up. But here's a quick one before we break. And when we come back, I'll read the story about Doc and his million-mile Civic. Here is a new study, by the way, that there's an ingredient in McDonald's French fries that may cure baldness.
Do tell.
And I do know that, I mean, if this is, someone should call George Costanza right now and have him just start ordering French fries like a maniac. Remember the episode of Seinfeld where he got that nasty smelling cream from China?
Oh, yeah.
Because he watched the TV special and he said that if you put it on, it'll cure your baldness. Well, anyway, stem cell researchers in Japan may have discovered a quick cure for baldness, and that's McDonald's French fries. According to WLWT, a new study from Yokohama National University states a chemical used in the cooking of the giant food chain's fries has been added to prevent the oil from frothing. Researchers were able to regrow hair on mice by using, I can't even pronounce what, dimethylopolysoax to mass produce hair follicle germs. Biomaterials reports the successful preparation of up to 5,000 HFGs simultaneously led to new hair growth from the HFGs after transplantation to mice. The study released last week claims the cooking oil additive is a breakthrough in the experiment. The key for the mass production of HFGs was a choice of substrate materials for culture vessel, according to the author of this this project. We used oxypermeable, PDMS for short, at the bottom of a culture vessel, and it worked very well. The technique has been tried out on mice, but researchers believe this technique of hair regenerative medicine may serve as a new hair care therapy. So there you go. The additive that they put into the preparation of McDonald's fries is going to cure baldness. So there we are. I'm telling you, it's the future. It's the future. We're in the future. Fries. I thought it was. I was. I bet there were a lot of guys out there who have who are balding or who are bald. Were like, oh, cool. I just get to eat more fries. Because I when I first read the headline, I thought it was. It's there's a new there's an ingredient in McDonald's French fries that make your baldness. I thought, well, wow, that's cool because everybody loves McDonald's French fries, and any excuse to eat more and more and more of them, in addition to being delicious, you get a nice head of hair.
Let's say Brian Urlacher is going, I should have skipped the procedure.
Exactly. I could have just eaten a bunch of fries. Have you seen the commercial with Ken Jeong and J.B. Smoove? The McDonald's commercial where they're talking about now they've got, for a limited time, they have bacon cheese fries.
Oh, yeah.
Available at McDonald's. And they're arguing over whether the fries are the best part or the bacon. Because J.B. Smoove takes the fries, because everybody loves McDonald's fries. I'm not as crazy about McDonald's fries as everybody is, but they are consistently, whenever we talk about French fries or the ranking of French fries or who likes what French fry, the McDonald's French fry is always at the top, always. People love McDonald's French fries. I mean, I like them, but I don't love them. I like White Castle French fries because they're crinkly. They got the crinkle fries. I like White Castle. I think White Castle has great French fries, but I don't dislike McDonald's. Nobody dislikes McDonald's French fries.
Yeah, I'll agree with you.
It's un-American. How can you not like them? But now they've got they got cheese and bacon on them, which makes them even better.
I need to try these.
Yeah. So
bacon is its own food group.
Well, you can get bacon everything for a limited time. You can get bacon on everything at McDonald's. You can get bacon on a Big Mac. You can get bacon on a Quarter Pounder.
What about in my shake?
Yeah, I think you can get bacon on a shake.
Sold.
So there you go. Vic, you a fan of the McDonald's French fries?
I am.
So
I remember, remember back when we used to cruise Main Street for fun? Do you remember that? I don't know if they did that in Chicago. We used to cruise Main Street, in your car.
And
my thing was vanilla shake
and a large
fry from McDonald's, and I was set for the night. Go cruise Main.
The thing was, what a lot of people do with the McDonald's French fry is they get the soft serve ice cream cone. And then they scoop up the ice cream onto the fry.
Right.
And I, that was a phenomenon that I discovered while I was working at McDonald's, 35 years ago, or 40 years ago, whenever I was working at McDonald's. And I saw somebody do it, and I'm like, are you insane? And they're like, no, it's delicious. And now the whole sweet savory thing is a big deal. Everybody likes the sweet and savory combination now. But back in the early 80s, I was like, what are you doing? That was weird. That was a fad. Oh, you see how I come full circle?
Right, yeah.
You see that?
Ice cream cone fries and a pet rock.
That's exactly right. Saturday night. I am a professional broadcaster. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Doc and his Million Mile Civic. Tom Appel wrote about it at Consumer Guide Automotive, and we wanted to do a little follow-up because Doc's one of our great listeners. Welcome back. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. And we're going to have Ron Henderson join us. He's a personal trainer who's in incredible shape, and he's written several books, and he's a motivational speaker, and he's a great guy all the way around. And we're going to talk with Ron after the 1:30 news. We are also going to talk about actors who nearly played some very iconic roles, and we're going to jump into the world of crazy fads from the past few decades. That's what's coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, if you're a regular listener of the show, you're very much aware of Tom Appel. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He writes for their Daily Drive blog, and we have him on once a month. And he found out that one of our listeners, a guy named Doc, has a Honda Civic that was about to hit the million mile mark. And so he wanted to write a story about it. So he did. And let's hear a little bit about it. One of the best perks of my job is visiting on air with WGN radio host Nick DiGilio as a guest of the Nick DiGilio show. A fixture of Chicago overnight radio, Nick's show is a late-night entertainment oasis in a sea of repetitive news, pre-recorded political blather, and infomercials. Oh, thank you, Tom. I'm reading this cold for the first time. Thank you, Tom. That's very nice of you to say that. Nick is a movie critic, horror film buff, pop culture junkie, and his show reflects his irreverent take on media, news, and life in general. Mostly, the show is just funny. Expectedly, the Nick DiGilio show audience draws from a wide base that includes third shifters, film lovers, insomniac, and long-haul truck drivers. For those who keep more conventional hours, the show is also very popular as a podcast. The folks who call into the show When I visit with Nick, typically ask questions about cars and trucks they might want to purchase. However, that's not what why Doc called. Doc Gould is a regular Nick DiGilio show listener, a frequent caller. While Doc has chimed in on a number of topics over the years, his question for me during my most recent appearance on the show was unexpected. How do you think Honda would want to know that I have put a million miles on my Civic? Yes, I responded. I bet Honda would. It took a couple of weeks for Doc and I to find time to talk. But I learned quickly that he is exactly the kind of guy you would expect to own a Honda Civic with nearly a million miles on the odometer and or listen to late-night radio. In many ways, Doc's personal story is more interesting than that of a high-mileage Civic. Imagine a news article about Teddy Roosevelt winning the Little Lotto or George Washington Carver earning a safe driving discount, and you get the idea. By his count, Doc has held 45 full and part-time jobs over the course of 65 years on the planet. His career accomplishments include having launched and sold a successful tropical fish business while in high school, mystery shopping fast food chicken restaurants, and this is where the Honda Civic comes in, being working as a bonded courier. Over the years, Doc has delivered medication, sensitive paperwork, and the occasional human organ. He has spent some time delivering pizzas as well. These days, Doc is a contract driver for Bevix, which is a logistics and delivery company that is probably one of the biggest businesses you've never heard of. Doc estimates that he drives about 4,000 miles a week. Could you imagine that? 4,000 miles a week? Currently splitting the mileage between his Honda Civic and his 2009 Honda Odyssey minivan he uses for larger loads. He spends much of this time driving a route that takes him from his home near Kansas City, Missouri, to St. Louis and Des Moines, Iowa. Doc prefers long hauls to short trips and claims that he quick naps, no more than 20 minutes, are a key way of keeping fresh. And for extended length delivery trips. As for his Civic, it's a 2008 automatic sedan, and it's the only car Doc has ever purchased new. Regarding the car's longevity, Doc has a couple of things to say about maintenance. Find a dealership you trust and do the work that they tell you to do. And don't be too cheap to do the maintenance. Virtually all of the service and repair work the Civic has needed has been performed in Missouri by Honda of Tiffany Springs, which Doc describes as the best pit crew in town. Doc has kept a meticulous record of all the work his Civic has received over the years, and it's really telling to pour through. His records include a number of brake repairs, some suspension work, few engine seals, and most significantly, a transmission replacement at around a half million miles. The engine, however, has never been replaced. Wow, that's amazing. And nor has it required significant repair. Doc believes his commitment to using only synthetic oil may have helped extend the engine's life. He reports that the Civic now has 992,540 miles on the odometer. Feels pretty much like new. Doc expects to cross the million-mile barrier sometime in the next couple of weeks. On the open road, Doc sees about 38 miles per gallon, down from the average of around 42 miles per gallon when the Civic was newer. As for keeping entertained on the road, Doc always enjoyed the aforementioned Nick DiGilio show and the Patty Vasquez. You believe I just said that? Patty Vasquez show, which precedes Nick's show on WGN, and he also likes to listen to music. As for other vehicles, Doc previously owned a 96 Honda Del Sol, which he sold with just under 500,000 miles on the odometer, and his Odyssey is pushing 600,000 miles. Oh, man. He's not a car guy in the traditional sense. It's worth noting that Doc's first car was a 1961 Chevrolet Corvair, a gift from his grandfather. Once it's over the million-mile mark, Doc would love to swap Honda his loyal Civic for a new one, but realize that that may not be in the cards. Doc says, if Honda doesn't want the car, I guess I'll keep driving it. It runs great. That's Doc. Million miles on his Honda, on his Civic. I'll tell you what, he seems very loyal to Honda. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it sounds like
you
it.
Know, he had a 2009 Honda Odyssey, yeah. So he's a Honda guy, no question about it. He's also a character, and he's called in before, he's texted in, and I have to say that there are pictures, by the way, that Tom put up in this article, and you can
I was looking at them.
You can see the car. You can see he took a picture of the odometer. He took a picture of the car. What it looks like now, it looks great. I mean, the car looks like it's in great shape.
Yeah,
and of course, there's a picture of Doc, and I got to say. If you go to consumerguide.com and go to the Daily Drive blog and check this out, I have to say, you know, that there's a picture of Doc standing in front of his Honda Civic, and Doc looks a lot like I thought what he would look like. That's all I'm saying.
I'll agree with that.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Is that like it's like, and when I saw the picture of Doc, I was like, yeah, that seems about right. That seems about right. He's an interesting looking dude. He's and I'm glad that he likes to listen to the show, and I'm glad that Tom was able to meet up with him and write the story. But that's Doc and his Million Mile Civic. Wanted to follow up with that, and I want to thank Tom Appel for writing a really fun piece and also being really kind with the kind words you said about my show. I appreciate that. It's one of my favorite segments to do on this show is the monthly visit for Tom Appel. It's informative. He's great, and it's always interesting, and he helps the listeners out a lot, and he's very entertaining and very funny, and he writes a lot of really interesting and fun stuff for the Daily Drive blog, and this is one of them. So anyway, check out Doc and his Million Mile Civic at consumerguide.com. And there you go. I just wanted to do that follow-up here on the show. Okay, we are going to take a break right now for the news. And then after the news, Ron Henderson is going to join us. He's a personal trainer for well over 30 years. He's written several books on the subject. And he's got a new program that he's talking about. And it's called Self Stage. And we'll talk with the very inspirational Ron Henderson right after we take a break for the news, which is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And, Steve Grzanich will come in at 5 with the opening bell, Steve Cochran at 6 on this Wednesday morning. We are going to be talking about roles that, famous roles that could have been given to other actors and actresses. I'll give you a quick example. Burt Reynolds was offered the role that Jack Nicholson got in Terms of Endearment, and he turned it down. So it's going to blow our minds to hear some of these, because some of the actors and actresses that were considered or auditioned or were offered these roles, these are classic roles that many of them you can't associate with any other actor or actress. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to get into some crazy fads from the past and present. And our phone number is 312-981-7200. For talk and text, you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, my guest right now is a person who's been on the show many times. He's an inspirational guy, and he's got a great story, and he helps people out. His name is Ron Henderson. He's been a personal trainer for over 30 years. He's written several books on the subject. He's got a new program that he calls Self Stage. And we're going to talk to Ron about health and fitness, about his history, about helping people out. And he's got some really great advice for people on how they can exercise better and have better health, and that's just what Ron does. And let's welcome Ron back to the show. Ron, welcome back, sir.
Yes, how are you, Nick?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Good. As always, just working on projects here. I'm always busy. You know that.
I know that. You're always busy. There's always a lot to talk about with you. And for people who have maybe not heard you on my show in the past, tell us your story about how you became a personal trainer and how that changed your life. And I know it goes back to you being inspired by Jack LaLanne.
Yes, it goes back to Jack LaLanne, but I got to tell you this since you asked me. Effective February the 3rd, it's actually my 40th year doing this.
40? Wow. 40. Wow, 40 years. That's incredible.
Yep, so 40 years been doing what I love to do and helping people, and so that's there's a lot to be said just with that, being able to inspire people. Top lawyers, top CEOs, top NFL players, top doctors, and the list goes on from the janitor to the chief of staff. So I've been doing it for a long time, and yes, Jack LaLanne, great inspiration. And, you know, and I don't think I mentioned this before, but of course, growing up watching movies like Hercules, those kind of things always inspired me. Steve Reeves and all those different movies that we used to have on TV growing up. So,
and so now, when you were a kid, though, you told me in the past when you were a kid, you didn't want to get picked on. You were picked on a little bit, and that was another inspiration for you to get into shape and to take care of yourself. Correct?
Well, yeah, that was a big part of it, because when I was younger, I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't in shape when I was a little kid, and I actually remember, too, as well, picking up one of those Popular Mechanics books And I remember looking at the picture of the guy having the sand kicked in his face.
Right, right.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
And a lot of people remember that. And I think even those things itself was an inspiration for me to say, you know, I'm going to get myself in great shape. And as I said before, I was never really worried about people ganging up on me because I always had fast feet. I could run fast,
right.
Okay?
Yeah.
But it was important just to get myself in the best shape as possible, and not so much to be able to even, let's say, fight back, but it actually builds you. Anytime you're in better shape, even at a young age, it instills, it builds confidence in your neck. You feel better. It's easier for you to avoid things when you feel comfortable in your own skin.
Right.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Now, when you decided that you wanted to get into shape and take care of yourself, did you go to a personal trainer? Did someone help you out, or did you start kind of just on your own?
No, I was just young. I just grew up at that age. I grew up, I mean, I was like a little kid doing push-ups, doing jumping jacks every morning with Jack LaLanne, literally with Jack LaLanne on TV.
Yeah.
Doing stuff. I remember even watching the old Superman show. Now, I remember actually almost breaking my leg because I grabbed the sheet and I put it on and I got on the roof of the house. And lucky it was just a one story and I thought I could fly, right?
No.
I almost broke my leg. I jumped off the roof, literally.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Yeah, so I was very, very active and I ate my spinach. I ate it out of the can because of Popeye,
yeah.
Because of those kind of stuff. And it was nasty, but I mean, they did a really good job. I got to share this with you, Nick. They did a really good job in those days of promoting things that were healthy for people in so many different ways compared to nowadays. And then they also did a bad job from the standpoint of showing the tough guy always smoking a cigarette. So you kind of had it both ways with that.
Yeah.
You know, the Marlboro Man, I walk a mile for a camel. And those people aren't walking anywhere now, obviously, right?
Yeah, right. Right. So you started out just working out and everything. When did you, now you said 40, it'll be 40 years that you did this. How did you begin your personal training, your business? How did that start?
How did I begin my business? Actually, I was working in the school system and they changed my job description and they said you no longer will be running around busting kids for drugs. You're going to be just sitting on your butt at the front of the door getting paid. And I'm a very active guy, and
yeah.
So I'm sitting there, and after several weeks of them saying, where are you, because I'm bringing kids back to the classroom, I saw an advertisement for a personal trainer in California, and I thought, you know what? People are always asking me how to train, always were asking me. I said, there's nobody doing this, and as far as I knew, in at least the 4 or 5 state area. So I decided that I would just write up an ad. So I wrote my first ad, and I ran an ad in the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. And even though they cut my face off, they charged me $440 for this little tiny ad. They cut half my head off, okay, half my head, and they had a professional, an expensive photographer, the photo they had, and I ran that ad, and I'll tell you what, I had so many calls that I literally panicked. I didn't know what to do because there were no trainers, and people loved the ad. They loved the look of it. They could see that I was serious. People were calling me, and I would probably say I called, I don't know, maybe 70% of the people. The rest of them I didn't even call back because I was overwhelmed.
Wow.
So that's basically how it started.
Right out of the gate, it was popular then. Yeah.
It was popular, and a lot of people were asking me. But here's the thing, too, Nick, and I tell people this because I was at a big event over the weekend at the Viking Stadium for a friend of mine that actually spent 50 years in the broadcast business. And I was telling them, they were talking about the different celebrities there. Well, I got to be well known because I had 3 or 4 commercials out and they were out all the time. But here's what made me actually well known and popular. At that time, you had Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11. Then you had 23 and 41.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
So when you're running ads, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, people are seeing it. Nowadays, it would take, I mean, you'd have to have so much money to get people to actually know who you are because there's so many stations and people could have it on whatever, 380 or something.
Yeah, it's true. But so that's a really great success story. Now, how many clients do you have now, and have you had some clients for many, many years?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, and people ask me that all the time, and this is never going to change with me. I would have to count how many clients I have. The reason I'm saying that is because I don't count how many clients that I have, because then it gets to be about numbers. It gets to be about money. It gets to be about something else. I'm in the service business, so I'm more concerned about helping people. Now, I can tell you that there's quite a few people that have been with me for over 18 years.
Wow.
For over my oldest guy, Mark Rosen, he's a WCCO sports teacher. He retired. He's been with me for 25 years. Another guy's been with me for 20 years. Another guy's been with me for 17 years. Lady's been with me for 13 years.
Yeah.
So those kind of things I can tell you. But I've made it a point, and that's why I've been able to actually do well in my business. And some of that we can talk about later. But really just to care more about people than I do about the finance end of things.
Well, that's a great philosophy, Ron. And I think that's probably why you're so successful, is because you actually care about what you do. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
And it's, by the way, the website I want to mention is ronhendersonfitnessking.com. ronhendersonfitnessking.com.
And Ron Henderson, thefitnessking.com.
Oh, 100thefitnessking.com. Make sure that
Ron Henderson, thefitnessking.
Okay. Ron Henderson, thefitnessking.com. Okay, we're going to take a break, Ron. And when we come back, I want to talk about Self Stage. This is your new program. And then I want to talk a little bit about your YouTube series, Motivation. Is that okay?
Yes, sounds great.
Okay, Ron, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Ron Henderson is with us, personal trainer for almost 40 years, and he's in fantastic shape. He's in his 60s, and he's in better shape than anybody that I know. And he helps people out. We're going to talk about his program called Self Stage. And again, if you are interested, it's Ron Henderson, thefitnessking.com. More with Ron right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Wednesday morning, and I hope everybody's doing well. And we are going to be talking about fads a little bit later on, and classic movie roles that could have went to different actors and actresses. And I think some of these are going to blow your mind if you try to picture somebody else playing these classic roles. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And our phone lines are always open at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And coming up, Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to my guest. It's Ron Henderson. He has been a personal trainer for about 40 years. He's written several books on the subject. His website is Ron Henderson, The Fitness King, and he helps people get into shape and feel better. We're talking with Ron right now. Ron, welcome back.
Yes, Nick.
All right.
I'm here.
Let's talk about this new program that you've launched. It's called Self Stage. And I understand that, you know, many of your clients are from many, many, many different walks of life and different businesses. And you try to help out business leaders as well. And this is one of your ways of doing that. Tell me about Self Stage.
Well, really, Self Stage, that's my signature right now. That's my signature keynote speech that I do. And Self Stage is, when I explain it to people, when you think of staging, typically, Nick, you think of somebody selling a home, right?
Sure.
They stage a home, and if you think about it, and this has been proven, people, if a home is staged well, generally speaking, it will sell within the 30 to 40-day time period because it's staged well. So this is really geared towards people in business, but also hitting those people, especially in the real estate business and people that are leaders in their organizations. So when I talk about self-staging, I'm saying, look at how you stage homes. Now, apply those principles to yourself. Now, you're going to sell a home. What do? You want to make sure that when people drive up to the house, that it looks good from the outside, you know, what they call curb appeal, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, if you're buying it for an investment, people don't care about that. But the typical person that's buying a home, Nick, for their family, you pull up. They want everything to look great, so you pull up, the yard looks good, the outside looks good. Now, let me tie this in. People say you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but guess what, Nick? We do it every single day of our life.
It's true.
We do it.
Yeah, it's true.
Somebody applies for a job, and you can't say, I'm not going to hire you because you're corpulent. And A lot of times those people don't get hired because people are worried about that person being having a heart attack 4 months later or whatever because they're obese or there's different issues. There's different things. People do. We do judge books by their cover. We shouldn't, but we all do. It's kind of natural. We do that. You come in, you got your pants sagging, they're dragging. I'm not going to hire you, as an example. Mm-hmm. So we do that. So self-staging, really, the first part of self-staging is people need to get themselves in the best physical shape that they can because it's how people perceive you. Another reason is if you're not in great shape, you have all these things that can distract you. When you don't have any energy, that's a distraction. When you're in pain all the time, that's a distraction. When your knees are hurting and your back is hurting, all those things distract you. So when you're meeting that potential person, especially somebody that's looking maybe to list with you or have you sell their home, but you have all those other things going on physically speaking, it's hard for you to be really dedicated to that person. So that's really the first part is people need to get in the best shape that they can and stay that way. And that really applies, Nick, to any single business. So that's what I do when I go out and I speak to these corporations. I motivate them, and I can motivate them because I've been dealing with people from Famous Dave to Second Wind Exercise, all these people all over that are pretty well known, and people that apply these principles do well in all areas of their life.
Mm.
So that's number one. Number two would be, Nick, would be you have to develop a positive attitude in every single thing that you do. Now, I've had people say, they'll say, well, is that easy? Well, I always pause for a second, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on your attitude. So when I say a positive attitude in every single thing that you do, every single thing that you do, all of a sudden you've spent 2 months with somebody and they decide to list with somebody else. What you do is you look at that and you say, you know what? They were supposed to be with that other person. Have a positive attitude. Because what happens if you're negative, Nick, then it pulls you down and then your phone rings, okay, and somebody else is looking to maybe have you sell a home for them. You pick up the phone and you say, hello, can I help you? Now, you think you're all right, but you're not all right, Nick, because you just got off the phone. You're angry at this other guy. You bring it into the conversation, even though you're not verbally saying anything, but that other person picks it up, and they're probably less likely to want to actually deal with you because they're picking up this negative energy from you. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of people really aren't aware of this, and so when I do the keynote, I kind of get into these things in the more detail. The number third is, it's called the catch and release system. Can I explain it to you?
Please.
Okay. Catch and release system is when something happens to you, you have this ability. It's almost like when you're fishing. You know, you're fishing for that fish, and you catch this fish. You'd love to keep it, but you're told that you can't. So you release it. You let it go.
Well, right.
Things come at us every single day. About 2 months ago, I went to the doctor. They said, oh, your PSA score is high. That's for prostate. And generally speaking, when it's as high as mine is, it means that you might have cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so what most people do is they get themselves down. What I did was I took a deep breath in front of my wife. I breathed in. I breathed out. I let it go. In other words, I recognize the situation, but I also realize that anything that's not positive is actually going to do more harm than what you think might be going on with your body. So you release it. You catch it, recognize it.
I got it.
Things happen for a release, but people really got to work on this. And when you do, you can have every single day of your life, you can actually walk and be happy, Nick.
Yeah, these are all great pieces of advice. It's amazing, you know, when you speak to these people for motivation, it's kind of amazing about how, you know, your mind and your head have a lot to do with your health and your fitness as well. It really does, and that's one of the things that I learn every time I talk to you.
Yeah, definitely. And the last one the last part of that, which is really pivotal as well, is, you know, you see these commercials all the time, Nick. They say, well, what's in your wallet? Well,
yeah.
What I say, it's not what's in your wallet, really. It's more about what's in your heart. So that's really about caring more about that individual than you do about yourself. And when you do that, you're always going to do well. As a perfect example, I had a realtor post something on Facebook this morning, and she talked about she got this award. It's the top award that you can get as a realtor. She gets it every year.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she got it, even though there was times in her life that she was feeling this year kind of down because her sales weren't where she wanted to, and a lot of these different things. And the first thing I thought was, when my book is published, I'm writing a book on that, writing two books, I'm going to get her a copy, because she did well financially, but she had those periods that she allowed when people would dump her and go to somebody else to draw her down. Mm. You can't do that, and the way to not do that, really, just keep working on it. And the more you work on it, Nick, the easier it gets. So when I go have my MRI, which is Thursday this week, whatever happens will happen, but I refuse to be pulled down. I'm going to stay positive because, see, things can happen that might make people, how can I say it? It's kind of like people can put you down in certain ways, but nobody can pull you down, Nick, but yourself, and even issues that you have in life. So you stay positive at all costs. It does work. You're going to feel better. So I still haven't had a bad day in 30-some years. It works.
That's great, Ron. That's really great. You're a great motivator. Let me ask you this, Ron. You are how old now?
I'll be 65 May 15th.
65 in May. And what's your workout routine, your daily workout routine? Because I want to blow people's minds here. What do you usually do?
Daily workout, I mean, generally speaking, after work I go home, I get on the elliptical, I get on the bike. And generally speaking, I just, because it's late, I'll say I'm going to burn whatever it is, 600, 700 calories, and I do that. I do weights, obviously. I work my stomach usually every day. And it's not about really the numbers, but I do quality, so I might do 150 repetitions for my abs. It's not a lot, but I do them. Let's say I'll do 10 of this, 10 of this, 12 of this,
right.
12 of this.
Right.
Now, you notice the numbers are really down. Well, that's because I'm practicing quality in what I'm doing. I'm not just throwing something together,
yeah.
throwing my legs up and
yeah.
back and forth. I concentrate. I focus my mind and my body and my breath on the muscle.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing how you motivate. And you also, I just want to mention really quickly, we're almost out of time here, but your YouTube series, Motivation, you interview people with inspiring stories. Can people see that on YouTube, Russ?
Yes, they can, definitely. Or if you want, feel free to give them, they can email me at motivationwithron.
Okay.
motivationwithron@gmail.com, and I can send them a link, and they can subscribe and get all my videos on there. Then I actually started one called Cooking with the King as well.
Oh, that's great, man. I think you need to do more projects, Ron. I think you need to be a little more busy. You're a real inspiration, Ron. It's always fun to have you on. Self Stage is the new program. Ron Henderson, The Fitness King, is the website that you can check out. And Ron, it's always a pleasure. It's always amazing to hear your story, and I really enjoy having you on the show.
Well, thank you, and I enjoy being on your show, the number one radio station in the world. Come on now.
Well, all right.
True. I always say that because it's true, Nick. It's a pleasure always talking with you as well. Stay fit in all that you do.
Okay, buddy. Thank you very much.
All right, my friend. Take care.
All right, Ron Henderson, everybody. A truly motivational guy. His story is great, and I love what he does. Okay, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next, and then after the news, we're going to jump into the topic of classic movie roles that could have been played by other actors or actresses. It's going to be fun talking about that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you want to join us. A little bit later on, we are going to reminisce and go back in time and also talk about the current fads, some crazy fads that we went through back in the day, and we've got a whole bunch of them that we're going to go through and talk about the ones that we were guilty of being a part of or maybe we enjoyed. Some of the weird ones, some of the dumb ones, some of the fun ones. So crazy fads coming up. Also, the Blackhawks, as you heard in the news, their seven-game winning streak came to an end. They were beaten by the Boston Bruins last night, and we will play back the Blackhawks Express, giving you all the highlights from last night's game. We do that every morning. Every morning after each Blackhawks game, we play back the Blackhawks Express. So that'll be coming up as well. Again, our phone number is 312-981-7200. Now, we got a bunch of actors and actresses who nearly played some very iconic roles that would have changed the way we looked at these movies in major, major ways. I gave you a quick example of it. Jack Nicholson in Terms of Endearment, who played the next-door neighbor astronaut love interest for Shirley MacLaine. That role was written by James L. Brooks and offered to Burt Reynolds, and he turned it down. One, that was a dumb decision on Burt Reynolds' part because that was the same year he decided to make a movie called Stroker Ace, which is one of the worst movies ever made, and clearly one of the worst Burt Reynolds movies of all time. Nicholson went on to win an Academy Award for that role. Who knows what would have happened if Burt would have taken that role. So that's what we're talking about. How different would the movies be? How can you imagine somebody else playing these parts? So if anybody knows of any of these stories and you want to share them, we've got a bunch of them here, so we're going to get to it. Some of these are really, really weird. So Tom Cruise could have been Iron Man instead of Robert Downey Jr.
That one I knew.
Yeah. And, first of all, Robert Downey Jr. rules in the Iron Man movies.
He's perfect.
Unbelievable as Tony Stark. He's great. That was the year of his big comeback, you know, after having all those issues and everything.
Yeah.
But, that was the same year. Iron Man came out the same year as Tropic Thunder. And he was nominated for an Academy Award for Tropic Thunder. So it was 2008. It was a big year for him. And speaking of Tropic Thunder, Tom Cruise is the king in Tropic Thunder. For my opinion, everybody loves Robert Downey Jr. And that's a very funny movie, and everybody's very funny. I think Tom Cruise is the best thing in that movie. I think Tom Cruise is hilarious in Tropic Thunder. But I think he would have made it. I think Tom Cruise, because I'm actually a really big Tom Cruise fan. I happen to really like him. Always have. I know he's a weirdo, you know, and he's done some stuff in his private life that's kind of strange, the whole Scientology thing. He's, you know, made some movies that weren't so good, like The Mummy and stuff like that. But I'm a fan. I've been a fan since Risky Business, because Risky Business is a seminal movie in my life. When Risky Business came out, I had just graduated high school. I was 18, and I had just graduated high school. So I was the age of the main character. Now, I'm not a wealthy, nor I was never a wealthy North Shore kid, but the same sort of base stuff that he was dealing with, his future, you know, being that age, dealing with the pressures of that movie, like, really, really deeply affected me. It's my second favorite movie of all time. And oddly, my favorite movie of all time also stars Tom Cruise, and it's Magnolia. Which is my favorite movie ever, and until Magnolia came out in 1999, Risky Business held that spot, and it's unbelievable. But here's what they say. This is a website that put some opinions to this. So Tom Cruise could have played Iron Man. It would have changed the way the character is played, because Downey's got a very specific sort of like charm to him that's much different than what Tom Cruise's charm really is. Because you know what I mean. It says, the Marvel Universe could have looked very different indeed had the numerous discussions held between Kevin Feige and Tom Cruise resulted in the toothy A-lister playing billionaire Tony Stark. If it's possible, this is how it would have played. If it's possible, try to and imagine Tony Stark as even more smug. That's what they think if Tom Cruise played the part. And then why we're glad they didn't get it, why we're glad they didn't part, because Downey also brings a good amount of smug to the table, but it's offset by humor in spades, and his comic timing is perfect.
I agree.
Yeah. So many of these that we're going to talk about, it's just hard to imagine anybody else playing the part, and I can't imagine anybody playing Tony Stark but Downey. I mean, he made that, that's his role. And in all of the Avenger movies, he's like, he's the highlight in terms of acting, because the acting in those movies is really good. Like, you know, you don't have to, sometimes you think, geez, well, they're really giving great performances for a comic book movie, you know, but he's the element that holds it all together. The whole Avenger universe is all around Iron Man, all around Tony Stark. Yeah. And that 2008 movie was groundbreaking in that way. Like, people love that movie, and they should, because it was great. And also because Jeff Bridges was the villain. So,
yeah.
This is an interesting one. Sean Connery could have been Gandalf in The Lord of the Rings instead of Ian McKellen. And that would have been really weird, I think. Well, again, I can't picture anybody but Ian McKellen playing that role. You know what I mean? The part is the wise old wizard at the heart of the Lord of the Rings saga, and now also the Hobbit. How they would have played it? Good morning, Mr. Baggins. It would have been very weird to have that accent. Why we're glad they didn't get it. Sir Ian McKellen's dulcet tones are now inseparable from the character. You shall not pash wouldn't have worked quite so well.
See, when you bring these characters up, I envision another role, you know, that these actors, you know, have portrayed, and envisioning that role in what they might have done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Sean Connery in Hunt for the Red October.
Right.
That would have been trying to do Gandalf.
Yeah, trying to do Gandalf. Exactly. Sean Connery turned down. So he turned that down, okay? And then I guess it was his granddaughter was like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, why did you turn this down? This is one of the greatest parts. This is one of the most legendary books ever written. And the character, he's the best character in the movie. And he just didn't get it. Like Sean Connery, I've heard quotes of him, like, just he didn't understand it. He didn't understand the genre. He didn't get it. So the next movie that's offered to him that's kind of, you know, based in fantasy, he takes, okay? He takes the part. And it was the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So he said yes to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but he turned down Gandalf. The reason why he said yes to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is because he said no to Gandalf.
Well, I didn't know that. Yeah. And I thought he was great in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
You did?
Yeah, I liked that movie. As odd as it was, it caught my attention.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Not a fan. You know what else he turned down? I'll give you another one. Another one that's on this list. In the same way, Sean Connery turned down Morpheus in The Matrix, the part that eventually went to Lawrence Fishburne, and he turned that down. So that's two sort of sci-fi fantasy things, which is why he said yes to immediately to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, because you know The Matrix went on to be the phenomenon that it was. Lord of the Rings turned out to be one of the biggest movies ever made, and he would have had major, major roles in both of those movies. And so he went, okay, whatever comes across the board next that's fantasy-related, I'm taking it. And so he said yes to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which turned out to be one of the biggest bombs ever made. But Connery also was going to play the old sage in The Matrix, but he passed up on that one as well. How they would have played it, probably with less cool than Lawrence Fishburne, but with more enigmatic ticks thrown in for good measure. Why we're glad he didn't get it, because Connery famously didn't get either Lord of the Rings or The Matrix, which makes you think that it was probably for the best. And again, you know, Lawrence Fishburne is Morpheus.
Oh, he is.
I mean, and you know who was supposed to, you know who was offered Neo, right?
I don't remember, but I know there was another
Will
offer.
Smith.
Yeah.
It was Neo, you know, was offered to Will Smith, and he turned it down. And so you could imagine Will Smith and Sean Connery.
Oh, man.
I mean, just imagine that, you know? And The Matrix is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I don't care. I back the sequels. I like the sequels. I know a lot of people hate them.
Oh, I liked them.
I like all three of The Matrix movies. I don't care. The second one is really, really great. The third one is good, not great. But as a whole, it's a very satisfying trilogy. And again, man, you know, nobody else could be Neo. I mean, Keanu Reeves is perfect for that role.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that somebody else was offered it, like Will Smith, who's, you know, like a Fresh Prince snarky guy. The thing about that is, like, Neo, the whole character is built upon the idea that he has no idea what the hell is going on. And that's Keanu, you know? And I happen to also be a big Keanu Reeves fan. I back him, too. And I know a lot of people think he's a terrible actor.
Oh, I think he's awesome.
I think he's great. And the John Wick movies make me happier than...
Oh, man. I cannot wait for the new one.
God.
Cannot wait.
Please. I love those movies, man. I love those movies. But anyway, so because of the nature of the character, like, he has no idea what his purpose is. You know, the whole, I know Kung Fu. That's awesome. That line reading the whole, whoa, is fantastic. his reaction to this insane stuff that's happening around him. And that moment, this it's a really, to me, it's a beautiful moment. I actually get a little verklempt. The moment when he realizes he is the one, when his arms are flying around and like he's just like it's second nature to him. He's not even conscious, not even looking. And you know the he stops the bullets and then his arms and he's doing the fight thing in the hallway at the end of the movie. I was like, that's like and Lawrence Fishburne, he's beginning to learn and that and it's such a great moment where he's like, oh, you know what, I am the one. And the final shot of the Matrix to that damn Rage Against the Machine song, which is such a jam, of him hanging up the phone and flying up to the camera, one of the greatest endings in movie history. And I'll tell you something. When I saw The Matrix, because nobody really knew what the hell The Matrix was when it first came out. You know, nobody knew who the Wachowskis were at that time. Keanu Reeves in a science fiction movie? What is this? But the way it changed, I mean, it changed movies. The Matrix changed movies from every angle, from every conceivable angle, from storytelling, to especially special effects with the bullet time stuff. But that ending of that movie, the first time I saw it, when it was over, I was like, I went the next day and I saw it again because I could. When it was over, I was like, I literally was like, that was one of the coolest movies I've ever seen in my life. And that final shot is so exhilarating, like him just flying up into the camera. Unbelievable.
So you hit a line that I was thinking about as soon as you said Sean Connery as Morpheus. So would they have had to re-script some of it to, you know, he is the one to there can only be one?
throwing a little Highlander reference in there. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's very similar. That would be too similar, I think. You can't die, you fool. You're immortal. Unless he gets his head cut off. That's the other thing. The Highlander, the first Highlander rules.
Oh, it was awesome.
The first Highlander rules. I just love the fact that there's like pro wrestling in it too, like at the beginning of the movie. Yeah, that was another one that kind of came out of nowhere. Like I was surprised at how much I liked it. All right, so anyway, we're talking about actors and actresses who could have actually played very iconic roles and changed those movies significantly. And if you have anyone that you know about, 312-981-7200. Neo stepping out of the telephone booth right now. Yeah, I applauded at the end of this movie. And I, you know what? When people applaud at movies, I always think it's weird because I'm like, you know that the people in the movie can't hear you, right? But I've been in movie theaters where people applauded. The last time I was in a movie where people actually applauded was Green Book. Was the Viggo Mortensen, Maharaja Ali a movie. There was applause at the end of the movie. One of them being my dad, who absolutely loves that movie. So, there you go. That's from The Matrix, and it could have been Will Smith flying up from that phone booth, and it could have been Sean Connery giving him the advice and the lessons instead of Lawrence Fishburne, and that's what we're talking about. Movies that would have been completely different because other actors were offered or turned down these iconic roles that now you can't think of anybody else to play them. Now, this next one is an example of like because the movie itself that we're going to talk about here, this movie had the most insane casting issues maybe of any movie of all time. And the amount of actors who were considered for the roles in this movie is nuts, and it's The Godfather. The Godfather, if you have like the complete set, The Godfather, you know, the DVDs or the Blu-ray or anything, there's a documentary. It's like a 2-hour documentary on the making of The Godfather, and it's fantastic. And what Francis Coppola had to go through to cast who he wanted to cast in the movie was insane. Paramount didn't want it. They didn't want Brando. They didn't want Al Pacino. It's crazy, and they on the DVD they have the actual screen tests for so many actors. Robert Evans, the producer back then, wanted like Ryan O'Neal to play Michael Corleone. And I can't even imagine, can you imagine Ryan O'Neal?
No.
But he was hot at the time. You know, Love Story was out, was one of the biggest hits for Paramount, and they wanted him. And then, of course, Jack Nicholson. This is the one that we're talking about. Jack Nicholson was offered Michael Corleone, or could have been Michael Corleone, because the studio wanted it. The beloved son of Don Vito Corleone could have been played by none other than Jack Nicholson, who eventually dropped out claiming he didn't feel the role was right for him. We could certainly have bought Nicholson as the murderous mafioso, although he might have been a bit more flamboyant than Al Pacino. You think?
Well, at
this point, Al Pacino is more flamboyant than Jack Nicholson. That's happened over the years. Over the subsequent performances, Al Pacino has learned, you know, as now he screams every, not so much anymore, but like right around Son of a Woman in Heat, he's screaming at everything. And while we were glad they didn't get it, we agree with Nicholson's verdict. While the role wasn't quite right for him, it was actually perfect for Pacino, who Coppola had to really fight for, to the point where if Pacino, because Coppola fought for him, he's like, I want Al Pacino, because it's a very subtle performance, especially in the first movie, in the first Godfather movie. It's a real subtle performance by Pacino, and it's a great performance.
It's awesome.
A truly great performance. But they wanted something, you know, flashier, and so when the dailies were coming back, they were like, this guy sucks. They had, like, the Pacino, you know, the producers and Robert Evans were like, this Pacino guy, this kid sucks. He's terrible. We got to get somebody who's better known and who's more popular, and who'll bring more energy to the role. And then, and they actually had, I can't remember who it was, but they had another director on set, because if Pacino screwed up again, they were going to fire Coppola on the spot, fire his ass, and then bring in a new director. So they had a backup director on set, which of course made Coppola feel paranoid. Like, you know, the producers don't trust him enough to make this movie, and this is a big, important movie. And so they had a backup director, and I wish, I can't remember who it was, but... No, the casting changes and decisions of The Godfather is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man.
Yeah. Going back to classic Hollywood, I think Ron Walsh and John Huston were glad that George Raft turned down roles in High Sierra and Maltese Falcon.
Wait a minute. George Raft was offered those roles?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, I realized that George Raft was massive, you know, at that time. But those would have been, you know, but those, especially the Maltese Falcon. High Sierra is great, but Maltese Falcon, nobody could have played that role than Bogart.
Well, George Raft was kind of a Johnny One Note actor, also.
Yeah, he was.
So Humphrey Bogart brought a lot to those roles.
He did. He absolutely did.
That really propelled him into stardom.
No question about it. I can't imagine. Now I'm trying to. This is every time I think about these topics about, you know, like, trying to picture other. Can you try and picture George Raft in the Maltese Falcon? I can't even.
Oh God, no.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Right. You know, that's the studio system in those days, man. You know, that was their top dog. One of their top dogs.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You sign a contract, you work. That's what you do.
Okay,
you,
Nick.
All right, Mike. Take care, buddy.
Take care.
Yeah, that would have changed the complexion of that movie, of those movies, completely. George Raft in the Maltese Falcon and High Sierra. God, those are two legendary Bogart performances. But, you know, Bogart, a lot of people, I don't think Bogart gets the kind of respect that he deserves, you know, because a lot of people, like, they do the voice, and that was a terrible Bogart, my God. But he was really a great actor. Humphrey Bogart was a great, great actor. And, you know, a lot of those guys, like George Raft, they all kind of relied on their same, you know, the same mannerisms and the same little tricks that they would do. But Bogart would dive deep. I mean, his performance in Casablanca, man, I mean, beautiful, beautiful. Okay. All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up, and then we got more insane actor and actress stories about iconic roles that could have gone to somebody else, and some of these are really crazy. 312-981-7200 if you want to comment, talk, or text. Morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about crazy fads a little bit later on, but right now we're talking about roles that are very, very iconic in movies that could have been played by other actors than the ones that actually played them, and how that would have affected the movie, and how hard it is to have pictured that. And that, of course, was the Godfather theme, which was a movie that had casting drama throughout the whole making of the film. And at that time, Marlon Brando was box office poison. Again, Coppola had to fight for Brando, too, to be in the movie. And then it turned out he won the Academy Award. And it's one of the most iconic performances in the history of movies. So, so we're talking about some of these actors and actresses who could have played a different role. So here's one for you. Molly Ringwald could have been Vivian Ward from Pretty Woman. She could have had Julia Roberts' part in Pretty Woman. Now, Pretty Woman is a movie I despise. I happen to absolutely hate Pretty Woman. It would have been interesting. I think Molly Ringwald, you know, I'm glad she didn't do the movie because I hate the movie. And I like Molly Ringwald very much, but I hate the movie a lot. But I think Molly Ringwald would have been better, quite frankly. But here's what they say about that. The tart with a heart, Vivian, falls in love with a wealthy guy who basically remodels her entire personality. That's romance, kids. How they would have played it, it's a strange one to imagine, but Ringwald is a much tougher customer than Roberts. Her Vivian would certainly have had more edge. Why we're glad they didn't get it, like it or not, Vivian's primary characteristics are her sweet nature, and that sits better with Miss Roberts than it does with Miss Ringwald. And again, that's a role that is so closely associated with Julia Roberts, it would have just been crazy. So, all right, how about this one? Gwyneth Paltrow could have been Rose in Titanic instead of Kate Winslet.
That one I think I would really enjoy seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Kate Winslet's, you know, I mean...
Well, I think she did a great job.
Yeah. I mean, but Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, and at that time, the movie was shot in 1995-ish, 96, mm-hmm. and it came out in 97. She was big at that time, Gwyneth Paltrow, and yeah. it was about a year before Shakespeare in Love, when she won the Academy Award for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been interesting. And you know about the drinking game for Titanic, right? Do you know about the drinking game associated with Titanic?
No, I don't think I know that one.
Okay. Take a drink every time... They say Jack or Rose in the movie. You'll be drunk 20 minutes into the film. Like, during the last hour of Titanic, the word Jack and the word Rose is said so many times. They scream each other's names 9,000 times. I don't know if anybody's counted the number of times that Jack and or Rose has been said, but it's nuts. It's completely nuts. Here's what they say. One half of Titanic's doomed love story was a role that won Kate Winslet an Oscar nomination. How she would have played it with a similar dose of tremulous emotion, but possibly a tad more steel, they think. Winslet and DiCaprio's chemistry was impeccable. We wouldn't want to tinker with it. Thank you very much. So, and they did have great chemistry. DiCaprio and Winslet.
I have an answer for you.
Oh, you have an answer for the Jack and Rose?
Yeah.
Count?
Rose says Jack 80 times, not counting when she calls him Mr. Dawson. And Kate Winslet and Glory Stewart,
the flashback and the present day.
Yeah, but then Jack says Rose 50 times.
So it's 80 times for Jack and 50 times for Rose.
Yeah.
That's I told you it was an insane amount. It's insane. Completely.
I don't think I could do that drinking.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's an impossible drinking game.
I like the challenge. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. So, all right. Here's another one Tom Cruise could have had. Tom Cruise could have been Ferris Bueller in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which, of course, went to Matthew Broderick. And this is another movie I despise. In fact, I absolutely hate every frame of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Really?
I hate every frame of the movie. And it's my second, I think it's the second worst movie ever made. The worst is Natural Born Killers. That's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. I hate that. I can't stand that movie. But Ferris Bueller is offensive on so many levels, it's unbelievable. It celebrates the behavior of a spoiled, rotten jackass. He's one of the most despicable characters in the history of movies. I think he's more despicable than Ralph Fiennes was in Schindler's List. I can't stand the Ferris Bueller. I can't stand that movie. The only thing in that movie that's any good is Jeffrey Jones as the principal, because he's got great comic timing and a really great face. And the scenes between him and Edie McClurg, who's his secretary, because Edie McClurg rules the planet.
Yeah,
that's the only stuff in the movie that doesn't make me sick. But just the celebration of this jerk, this spoiled white North Shore jackass. I hate it. I can't stand it. But Tom Cruise He's a teenage slacker extraordinaire. Ferris is the role that made Matthew Broderick a star. how would he have played it? Remember Risky Business? Like that, basically. Cruz's toothy charm probably would have worked, but Broderick is extremely likable, serving up warmth in a cool and equal measure. Here's the difference between Risky Business and Ferris Bueller, because people are like, how can you like Risky Business and hate Ferris Bueller? Because the main characters are both North Shore spoiled rotten guys, which makes me nuts. But the thing about Risky Business is the behavior that Joel Goodson does in the movie, he's punished for, and it's looked down upon. The ending of the movie is the total corruption of an innocent. That's how Risky Business ends. Risky Business has a tragic ending, and it's played that way. It's not played for laughs. It's not celebratory. It's some spoiled, rotten, despicable jerk, entitled jerk, being celebrated. It's about, the lessons that this kid, Joel Goodson, has to learn and how he gets rewarded for it. So, like, at the very end of the movie, when he makes it to Princeton, that's a massive statement about Princeton and about success and about businessmen. It's a massive statement because he got to Princeton because he's a pimp. That's why he got into Princeton. And that's not a happy ending. And it's not played as a happy ending. It's played as a tragedy. That's why there's a huge difference. Huge difference between, the Risky Business and Ferris Bueller in terms of tone. And, But anyway, Tom Cruise could have played it. Let's see. I'm glad the version of Superman with Nicolas Cage fell through. That would have been too weird. Yeah, Nicolas Cage. Yeah, he was really obsessed with that. I remember, but I'll tell you what, man. The version that they ended up making sucked. With Henry Cavill or whatever the hell his name is. It sucked. So I don't know if it could have been any worse with Nicolas Cage in the role. 724 area code. For The Godfather, they were also looking at Redford and Beatty as the sons and Olivier as the Don. They wanted big names of the day. Exactly right. I'm telling you, watch that documentary about the making of The Godfather because it's amazing. I mean, what Coppola had to do. And then the incredible thing is the result of that movie. Like, I mean, it's like the casting could not have been more perfect. Could not have been more perfect. But yeah, they wanted superstars of the time, and Beatty and Redford were huge at the time. So was Ryan O'Neal. And you can't imagine these guys playing that part. It's incredible. 847, Nick, Tom Cruise is truly the Prince Farquhar as depicted in Shrek. Okay, because he's short. All right, I get it. All right. How about this? Alec Baldwin could have been Richard Kimball in The Fugitive instead of Harrison Ford. I still think it would have worked, but Harrison Ford's great in The Fugitive. But I still think Alec Baldwin could have done it. Now Alec Baldwin is just, he's embraced the fact that he no longer has that really beautiful leading man physique and look. Because he's big and puffy now. He's an older dude, and he's totally embraced that. And now he's just now it's just mostly comedy that he does. I mean, he used to be a serious actor. He did comedies, here and there, but he was mostly a pretty serious actor. It's really funny because, even Baldwin, cops to this. Like, he was on a talk show one time, and they did a split screen of him when he was on Days of Our Lives or one of the talk shows or one of the soap operas. And he was like really, really thin and really, just beautiful with a big head of hair. And he's like, I don't even remember that guy. I have no memory of who that guy is anymore. So this is really weird because what's funny is that they both played Jack Ryan.
I was just thinking that.
Because, Alec Baldwin played him in Hunt for Red October, and then, Harrison Ford played him, in the other Patriot games and whatever the hell the other was, Clear and Present Danger. Yeah. So it's funny that they shared that part, that they ended up sharing that part. And then who else played him? Ben Affleck played him.
Yep.
In Some of All Fear. And then Chris Pine played him.
Yeah. Jim from The Office.
He's out. He's playing him now. But Chris Pine.
Oh, that's right.
Chris Pine played him in a Jack Ryan movie that was out for about 5 minutes. And have you
that
watched
was the one with Kevin Costner?
Have you watched the Hulu?
It's awesome.
It's so good.
That is my favorite Jack Ryan portrayal at this point.
Oh, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But you know, and I think Krasinski's great. What a year! What a year Krasinski's had.
Yeah,
man. It says here, having also already missed out on continuing as Jack Ryan to Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin was also offered the lead in The Fugitive, only to turn it down. How it would have played, casting Baldwin opposite Tommy Lee Jones would have produced a right old snarl off. Alas, it wasn't to be, but we're glad they didn't get it. Becoming something of a comedy icon, Baldwin's characters weren't half as likable as they are now. Ford was a primo leading man back then for a very good reason. About this one, Warren Beatty could have played Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, the part that went to that eventually went to Michael Douglas. Notoriously choosy in his roles, Beatty passed on the role of slippery corporate guy Gordon Gekko, allowing Michael Douglas to steal in and make the role his own. How they would have played it in Beatty's hands, it is possible that Gekko could have come across as even less likable than Douglas's incarnation. Why are we glad we didn't get it? Well, Beatty does brash and bluff very well. Nobody could be oilier than Douglas is here. I think Beatty would have been great in Wall Street. I think he would have been really great, actually, in that movie. I happen to be like a massive, ridiculous Warren Beatty fan. Like, I love Warren Beatty. And I also think he's one of the best directors that's ever made movies. I mean, the guy made Reds, which is a masterpiece. But I just happen to have a weakness for Warren Beatty. I always have. I've liked him. I love him in everything. Even when they announced La La Land as best picture, felt so bad for Warren Beatty because you know he clearly was like he knew something was wrong at that announcement. And then Faye Dunaway went ahead and said La La Land, and he was like So I don't know, but Warren Beatty as Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, I think would have been pretty interesting. Let's see. Here is Kurt on WGNI. Kurt.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning. Two of them that I've heard about in the past, two movies that I like a lot, actually, was Lord of the Rings, the role of Aragorn, played by Viggo Mortensen, was first offered to Nicolas Cage.
Oh, no. No, that's Viggo, man. Nobody but Viggo. Viggo.
Exactly. And another one, way older than that, O.J. Simpson was offered the part of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I totally forgot about that. That's true. That's another one where the casting was a little interesting because, you know, Lance Hendrickson was also considered for the Terminator role. But then, you know, he ended up in the movie. He played one of the cops in the movie, him and Paul Winfield. But Lance has been on my show like 5-6 times, and he's amazing. And tells the story about...
He's a great character actor. Oh. Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to how they're going to... I've heard they're going to re-put Terminator now and have the original... Lynn Hamilton come
back.
Yeah,
I know, I know. Connor. It's like all the Terminator ladies are coming back. And Linda Hamilton's coming back. I'm looking forward to it. I know a lot of people are like, I don't know, but now I'm looking forward to it. I am. It can't be worse than the last two Terminator movies because they were awful.
Yeah.
All right.
I am a fan of the whole series, though, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So.
All right, Kurt. Thanks, buddy.
You guys have a good morning. I'm driving home. I got to be safe here.
All right. Be safe, buddy. Take care. All right. All right. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back, and we'll talk more weird casting decisions. Like, for instance, here, before we break, I'll just tell you this one. Julia Roberts could have been Catherine Trammell in Basic Instinct. She could have had Sharon Stone's part. I can't even imagine that. Julia Roberts has never done a nude scene. I don't think Julia Roberts has ever done it. I don't think she's ever done a nude scene.
I don't think so.
How in God's name would she play that role? I mean, Roberts would have been a twee girl next door with a terrible secret, and there's no way in hell that the classic legs crossing scene would have made it to the final cut, they say. I can't even, I mean, that's the craziest one so far.
Yeah, my brain just broke out.
Yeah.
That one.
All right, we got a break here. We'll come back after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. It's course, that's from The Terminator. And it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up, Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell. And coming up, Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. And there we go. Yes. So,
Nick, do you know who else turned down The Terminator?
No.
Sylvester Stallone and Mel Gibson.
Wow. Okay. Mel Gibson would have been... What was he would have been fresh off of Road Warrior at that point.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. So The Terminator, and I got to say, you know, everybody I know likes T2 the best except for me. I mean, I love Terminator 2. I think Terminator 2 is absolutely great, but I still like the first one the most. I still like the first one. Of all the Terminator movies, you know, and again, I'm not putting down Terminator 2 because Terminator 2 is great, but the first one it has more heart. It's scrappier. I like the fact that it was made on a shoestring budget and that nobody really, you know, knew what Arnold Schwarzenegger was capable of. I also like the fact that And you knew when they made Terminator 2, you knew that they had to, because at that point, Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the time they made Terminator 2, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a megastar. It was like 7 years in between movies. And so, you know, they had to make him a good guy. So that's the one thing. I like the fact that in the original Terminator, he's just the bad guy. He's totally just the bad, and I love that. And not that I didn't like Robert Patrick as the T-1000, because he's great. And I do, and you know, it sounds like I don't like T2, but I do. I think T2 is great, and I like the third one. I actually like the third. I like the Terminator 3, with the female Terminator. I thought that was pretty badass. But the first one still remains my favorite. It really does, and it always will. So, here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, I'm good. Before I mention. Speaking of Terminator 2, Billy Idol was the original choice for the T-1000. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
He was the original choice for the T-1000.
I'm glad they went with Robert Patrick.
Absolutely. He nailed that part, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about interesting choices they would have had for John McClane in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Okay, there were talks of Burt Reynolds, Charles Bronson, and once again, speaking of Schwarzenegger... Die Hard was supposed to be a sequel to his movie Commando.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew that. And at that time, when Die Hard was made, there was no bigger action star on the planet than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, but of course he had Stallone with Rambo that year, so that had that rivalry.
Yeah.
Even they said when Die Hard was coming out, they nicknamed it Rambo in an office building.
Right.
That's what they said.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it was. All right. Thanks, Ike.
No problem.
Take care. You know, I remember the first time I saw Die Hard, and you know, it was at a time when it was 1988, so it was at a time when big, crazy, blow-em-up action movies were coming out every week. We were talking about Stallone, we're talking about Arnold, we're talking about big guns, blowing up, explosion, 80s action movies.
With and, dark steam tunnels and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I saw the trailer for Die Hard, and I was like, wait a minute. The dude from Moonlighting is going to be in this movie? What the hell is that? And I remember thinking, how can the dude from Moonlighting even think that he could pull off a movie like this? And Bruce Willis rules in Die Hard. There is no other person that could play John McClane. I maintain Die Hard 2. I'm totally in the middle. I like Die Hard 2 more than Die Hard. And again, I love Die Hard. I think Die Hard's one of the greatest action movies ever made. But I just happen to... I think Die Hard 2 is spectacular.
I'm with you.
I just think it's amazing. And then the rest of them suck. Die Hard 3 is okay.
I would say 3 okay. with Irons was pretty good.
And, you know, Samuel Jackson, all that stuff. And I've mentioned this before on the air. The thing that makes me nuts about Die Hard with a Vengeance, that Die Hard 3... Is that you know, like Jeremy Irons makes them run around the city doing different things in order to, you know, It's also basically a little bit taken from, it's taken from Dirty Harry, actually, where he's going, they're going to phone to phone, they have to figure out puzzles and stuff.
Yep.
That damn water puzzle where they have to pour the water into the, I remember the first time I saw Die Hard 3, after that scene where they figure it out, they go, oh, pour this, and they pour this, and weigh, and put it on the scale, and we'll get it. When it was over, I spent the next 10 minutes distracted. I couldn't even watch the movie because I was trying to figure out what the hell the puzzle was. I was like, wait a minute, what? They put the water in the thing. And so for 10 minutes, I was like, I wasn't even paying attention to the action or anything that was happening on screen because I was just like rubbing my head going, wait a minute, they poured the water from the jug into the thing and then the way the, how the hell, what?
Yeah, they cut a few steps of that puzzle out.
Yeah, I don't know. But it may, and every time I watch Die Hard 3, I've seen it a few times. Every time I watch it, that scene still makes me nuts. Like when it's over, I'm like, I can't, I don't know, how the hell, what? But anyway.
And it sucks because you can't remember how you figured it out last time, so you start all over again.
And you start all over again, exactly. Yep. It's an endless cycle. Okay, we got a break here. The news is coming up after this, and then more casting decisions that could have been. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning. No Wildcard Wednesday or any of those special bump mornings. Dan Chagrou is taking a little time off. Is off this week. And we want to thank Ben again for sitting in this morning. And, yeah, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. And that was obviously the theme from Men in Black. By the way, the song that's sampled there is Forget Me Nots, which is a much better song. And but they sampled Forget Me Nots by Patrice. Can you look that up for me, Ben? Forget Me Nots. It's a disco song from the 80s. I want to say 82 or something like that. Patrice something. Is the artist, I'm pretty sure.
Patrice Rushen.
That's it. Patrice Rushen, yes. That's it. And have you ever heard the song?
Actually, no.
Well, yeah, you have.
I knew it was sampled, but
Play a little bit of the song. Can you pull that one up? Forget Me Nots? Listen to the sameness of it. It's even the same. So, all right. Anyway, that's I prefer the original. That's actually, I really love that song. I love Forget Me Nots. And when I saw the video, the first time I saw the Men in Black video, I'm like, oh, come on, man. I mean, I'm not down on sampling. You can sample, but come on, man. That's some Vanilla Ice stuff you're doing right there.
Yeah, you got to change a little bit up.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason why Men in Black was played is because we're talking about some casting decisions that might have been really weird. We're talking about actors who could have played some iconic roles and it would have changed everything. Get this one. Are you ready for this one? David Schwimmer could have been Agent J in Men in Black, the Will Smith role. David Schwimmer. Now, Men in Black came out, what, 97? And that was at the height of the popularity of Friends at that time. So I can understand, it's like the top-rated show, that and Seinfeld, two top-rated shows on TV at that time. And they were so popular, the Friends were so popular that I could see that. But here's what he said. The younger half of Men in Black, the part was the wisecracking foil to Tommy Lee Jones' old hand. How would Schwimmer have played it? As Ross from Friends. That's how he would have played it. That's how he would have played it. Yeah, Schwimmer doesn't have a lot of range.
He would have had to have a monkey with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And leather pants.
Yeah.
Why we're glad they didn't get it. Jay needs to be ice cool counterpoint to rusty old K, and David Schwimmer is not ice cool. How about this one? Joaquin Phoenix could have been Dirk Diggler in Boogie Nights. Could have been the Mark Wahlberg role. But then would end up, I don't know if this is irony or coincidence, he ended up working with Paul Thomas Anderson on two movies. He did The Master and Inherent Vice. So he did end up working with Paul Thomas Anderson. The part was the ultra-endowed star of Boogie Nights who finds himself catapulted into stardom by the contents of his boxers. how would have Phoenix have played it? He was an intense performer, but Diggler is a rather simple character. He wouldn't have been enough of a black canvas. No disrespect to Mark Wahlberg, but it's the blank likability of his performance that makes this one work. A backhanded compliment, perhaps, but a compliment all the same. I think Wahlberg's great in Boogie Nights. I think he's great. Here's one for you. Russell Crowe could have been Wolverine in X-Men. The wisecracking, claw-sporting anti-hero of the X-Men franchise. How would Crowe play it? He would have played it up the character's snarling outsider persona, potentially at the expense of the humor. Hugh Jackman might not be everybody's cup of tea. Diehard fans continue to complain that he's not short enough. But for us, he nails the character's mix of savagery and don't-care humor. So, and again, I can't imagine anybody but Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. Can't imagine it. Yeah. Seriously. Edward Furlong could have been Spider-Man instead of Tobey Maguire. Your friendly neighborhood wall crawler circa James Cameron's mid-90 bid to bring the character to the big screen as a grungy, sulking teenager rather than a peppy, plucky hero that was presented to us by Tobey Maguire. That's the way that Furlong would have played it. Furlong was set to star opposite Arnold Schwarzenegger as Doc Ock. And so think about that for a moment. That was when the James Cameron was going to do that. Could you imagine that? Edward Furlong as Spider-Man and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Doc Ock.
That
directed by James Cameron. First of all, again, anybody, Alfred Molina is Doc Ock. There's just no, it's one of my favorite comic villain performances ever in movies.
Yeah.
I think Alfred Molina is phenomenal as Doc Ock. It would have been an entirely different thing, obviously.
Yeah.
So how about Rich on WGN? Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Hi.
John Wayne was originally offered a role at Dirty Harry, but turned it down. And he tried to do McHugh afterward.
Yeah.
And that bombed.
Yeah.
And also, John Wayne, when he did the Green Berets, he had George Chakee, who was so Andy Warhol, it wasn't funny, but he hired George Chakee because he wanted the best actor for the role.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about John Wayne being offered Dirty Harry, Frank Sinatra was also offered Dirty Harry. In fact, the part was written for Frank Sinatra. Like, originally written for Frank Sinatra. And then he ended up doing a movie called The Detective, which, you know, like, so Wayne went on to do McHugh, and then Sinatra did The Detective. So,
but, you know, when you look at the Dirty Harry character, you can't imagine either one of them being there.
Oh, no. I mean, that's iconic. It's Clint Eastwood. Because nobody else can be Dirty Harry. All right, Rich, thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Take care. Yeah, it's really strange. That it was indeed written for Frank Sinatra. That's who it was, a vehicle for Frank Sinatra, and I'm trying to remember why I think he turned it down because of the violence or because the character was, you know, the kid was like Dirty Harry, you know, is there are some racist things that Dirty Harry says and does in Dirty Harry, and I don't think Sinatra wanted to be a part of that. And that's another, I think that's why John Wayne turned it down too, because the character was just so corrupt. And dirty, essentially. How about this? Bruce Willis could have been Sam Wheat in Ghost, the part that Patrick Swayze played. So they would have their husband and wife would have teamed up then, because that was at the height of their popularity, was when Ghost came out. Because they were, you know, that was when Bruce Willis and Demi Moore were still married.
Yeah.
And that summer that Ghost came out, Die Hard 2 came out, and they had like. The one in two movies of the top 10 at the box office for like weeks.
Yeah.
It was a big summer for the Demi Moore, Bruce Willis, household. If Bruce Willis had been taking on those muggers, his character never would have wound up dead in the first place. That's how they would have played it, because he would have played it like John McClane. He played it like John McCain. Bruce is just a little too rough and ready for this one. Patrick Swayze, on the other hand, strikes a better balance between badass and romantic smoothie. Wait a minute now, man. He's too rough around the edges. Let me explain something to you. Patrick Swayze is in Roadhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Doesn't get more rough around the edge than Roadhouse.
Right boot.
Yeah, oh, that's that movie. God, I love that movie.
One of my favorites.
Oh, my God. It's so good. It's so, so good. Written by a woman, directed by a man whose first name is Rowdy, and that's how it feels when you watch that movie. Guy's name is Rowdy, who directed it, and don't even get me started on Sam Elliott in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. He should have got an Oscar nomination for that movie.
When you were talking about Elliott on Monday during the reviews for his new one, that's all I could think about.
Well, I mean, Roadhouse, come on, man.
Yeah.
You got a scrawny little punk named Dalton working here. I like when he pulls up on his chopper, he pulls up in front of the double deuce, and he goes, "The double douche."
That dog won't hunt.
Yep. Oh, man, that movie rules. I love that movie. I love that movie. And I remember when it came out, because it was that, you know, that was his follow-up. That was his follow-up to Dirty Dancing. And, you know, so he was like sweet, romantic, dancing Patrick Swayze, you know, singing She's Like the Wind and everything. And then, like, all of a sudden, what the hell is this? Stitching up his arm, you know, pain don't hurt. You know, do you know a quick aside here? Brian Grazer is a not Brian Grazer. Brian, I can't remember his last name, but anyway, one of the writers who used to write for SNL and co-wrote Scrooge with Michael O'Donoghue is really, really good friends with Bill Murray. Like, they're really close friends.
Okay,
and this is a true story. The writer is married to Kelly Lynch. Okay, who played the nurse or the doctor. Mm-hmm. She was a doctor in the movie. So Kelly Lynch, really beautiful woman, who's in Roadhouse. And they're married, or they were married. I don't know if they're still married, but they were married. And this is an absolutely true story. Whenever Roadhouse is on TV or on cable, Bill Murray calls up the writer, his friend, right at the sex scene, and says, "You know, your wife is having sex with Patrick Swayze right now. You might want to turn on the channel." Every time, no matter what time, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, if it's 2 in the afternoon, he calls this guy and says, "Hey, listen, in a couple of minutes, the scene where your wife is having sex with Patrick Swayze is on. I just wanted to let you know that you should watch it." Bill Murray, man.
Oh. It'd
be great to be friends with Bill Murray, get phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning like that. All right, we got a break here, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more here, wrap it up about actors who were almost in cast and iconic roles.
Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch.
Yeah. So this totally reminds me of, by the way, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on a Wednesday morning, Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 o'clock. So this totally reminds me of my old buddy, my buddy Scott Oaken, and I. We were roommates. We lived together in this place called the Honeybee Complex. And it was an apartment complex that was Foster just west of Cumberland. And in that area, there are all these cookie-cutter apartment complexes that look exactly alike. I mean, they're set up exactly the same. So we lived there, and there was a bunch of apartments in a big courtyard where you park your car, you get your parking lot and everything. And there are apartments across the courtyard from you and around the thing. So there was a dude who lived, and I'm assuming it was a dude because we never did see him, but there was a dude who lived across the courtyard from us, across the parking lot. We were on the third floor. He was also on the third floor, who would crank that song constantly. He would crank that song constantly. And so we used to just call him Swayze because he would just play it over and over and over again. We're like, "Well, Swayze's home." And we just call him Swayze. So anyway, would have been different if Bruce Willis was in that role for sure. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to do a lightning round here of these. Okay, I'll give you that. You can contemplate these while I do this. Tom Hanks could have been Jerry Maguire. Bill Murray could have been Batman in the Tim Burton Batman. Let's see here. Tom Selleck. Well, this is a famous one. Tom Selleck turned down Indiana Jones. It would have been Tom Selleck would have played Indiana Jones. That's a legendary one. Madonna could have played the part that Sharon Stone played in Casino. Daniel Day-Lewis could have played William Shakespeare in Shakespeare in Love instead of Joseph Fiennes, so it would have been a much better performance. How about this one? Robin Williams could have played Jack Torrance in The Shining. Sean Penn, how about this? Could have played Tyler Durden in Fight Club instead of Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's so good in that movie. I mean, forget it. Jeremy Irons could have played Hannibal Lecter in The Silence of the Lambs, and I think it would have been better. That's just me, because Jeremy Irons rules. So some of these are just, like, incomprehensible. Let's see. Billy Crystal could have been the voice of Buzz Lightyear. I mean, because then he would actually go on to do Monsters, Inc., so there you go. Here's another one. Eric Stoltz could have been Marty McFly in Back to the Well. He was Marty McFly for a little while in Back to the Future till he got fired. And it's really interesting to see the scenes because, in the big collectible box set of Back to the Future, they do have some footage that they filmed with Eric Stoltz. He played him completely differently than Michael J. Fox. Zemeckis said it was the hardest thing he ever had to do was firing him. You know, what just wasn't working. I mean, his take on Marty McFly was completely different than what Zemeckis had Jim Carrey was offered Captain Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean. He turned it down. Here's one that's insane. John Travolta, Forrest Gump. Could you even possibly imagine that? Mickey Rourke could have been Butch from Pulp Fiction, the part that Bruce Willis had. I think Mickey Rourke would have been good.
I think that would have been awesome.
Yeah. The part of Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters by Bill Murray was supposed to be John Belushi, but he died.
Yep.
Robin Williams could have been Hagrid from Harry Potter. Dustin Hoffman, this is an interesting, could be Rick Deckard from Blade Runner. That would have been a really interesting, weird and interesting take on it. Let's see. Danny DeVito could have been Sala from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You go first. Asps, very dangerous. You go first. But then Danny DeVito ended up in what is essentially, you know, a kind of a ripoff of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's a good movie, but he was in Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
So he got to be in that, which I love Romancing the Stone. Not Jewel of the Nile, not so much, but I love Romancing the Stone. Josh Hartnett could have been Loki in Thor. No.
No.
No, no, no. By the way, Loki and in the Marvel Universe, and especially Tom Hiddleston, my favorite villain. He's my favorite villain. And it sucks because he gets killed in the first 10 minutes of the last Avengers movie. I'm sure he'll come back, but maybe he won't. They kill him in the first 10 minutes of Infinity War. Because I knew that a lot of the Marvel characters get aced in that movie.
This is a topic that I could go on for your whole show.
But 10 minutes, you know, and Loki, Tom Hiddleston is great in that role. It is so great, especially in Ragnarok. He's phenomenal in
Ragnarok.
That
is probably my second favorite of the series at this point.
Of the Ragnarok. Of all the Marvel?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that movie. It was so funny.
Awesome.
Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah.
Sam Neill. Just with the quick if you're not paying attention.
Yep. Yep. Al Pacino could have been Han Solo in Star Wars.
That scares me.
Yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio could have been Patrick Bateman in American Psycho. I can't imagine anybody but Christian Bale.
No, yeah.
Playing that part. And he turned it down because of the controversy about it. But I'll tell you what. That's one of the most repulsive books I've ever read. I didn't even finish it. I threw the book across the room. American Psycho is one of the most repulsive books I've ever read in my life. When I heard they were making a movie out of it, I was like, this is going to suck. It's great. They turned it into a black comedy. And Christian Bale is phenomenal in that movie. It is a great, great performance. Ashton Kutcher was considered for Superman in Superman Returns. Can't even imagine that.
I will weep myself to sleep.
Tim Roth was considered for Professor Snape in Harry Potter. Now, see, I love Tim Roth. I love Tim Roth. I'm sure he would have done a good job. Alan Rickman, though. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Do you know that Alan Rickman, his first movie was Die Hard?
Yeah.
Isn't that insane? Like, yeah. Right out of the gate, he becomes one of the most iconic villains in movie history?
Yeah. Hans Booby.
Ugh.
Ugh, yeah.
And then finally, how about this one? Kevin Costner could have been Bill in Kill Bill instead of David Carradine. Wow. So that's weird. It's just because he's so not David Carradine-like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, well, there you go. Those are some of the weird casting, would have been weird casting decisions. It's crazy how movies go from their inception to being made. So, anyway. All right, we're going to take a break here for the news, and then when we come back, it's time to talk about crazy fads. Fads from the past, fads from today. We're going to go back in time starting here and now in the present and talk about some crazy fads, some of which I'm sure we all participated in at some point. I did have a pet rock, as I mentioned earlier, which is one of the stupidest fads in the history of time. And, of course, it took place in the 70s, as I mentioned before. So we're going to go kind of decade by decade, and I'm assuming that the 70s, when we hit the 70s, those are going to be the worst and weirdest of all fads. That would be my guess. All right. All right, let's take a break because the news is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. Hey, if you want to join us, we're going to be talking about crazy fads. We're going to go back in time. We'll start with the present, and we'll go back in time talking about some of the crazy fads that have happened. Which ones were you into? Which ones did you do? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So that's what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to start with, like, the 2010s. You know, one of the reasons why I thought about this is because of these ridiculous, like, these ridiculous fads that have been happening, you know, as these online challenges. You know, like, with the eating the Tide Pods, the dancing to Drake outside of a moving car.
Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yeah, Ice Bucket Challenge, which actually helped a lot of people, raised a lot of money.
Yeah.
And but the most recent one, the most ridiculous one, was the bird box challenge the Sandra Bullock Netflix movie, where, you know, people were, you know, blindfolding themselves and trying to do daily chores and do challenges blindfolded. And it's astonishing to me that Netflix actually had to send out a statement saying, "Hey, don't do this." Like, really? You need to actually tell people not to blindfold themselves and walk around and try and do things? I guess you do, because anybody, you know, in an attempt to get online and become a viral, some sort of viral sensation, just to be a part of it. Remember planking?
Yeah.
What the hell ever happened to planking? Never understood that.
And what was the, the mannequin.
Mannequin, yep.
Yeah, mannequin.
One. Mannequin thing. So those were all like the sort of the online challenges that that I was talking about. And here are some of the other ones. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, because I'm thinking about all these, you know, YouTube fads. The Harlem Shake.
How long
did that go for? Yep. Man.
Yeah, the Harlem Shake. Yeah. So now here are some of the other ones, that fads of the 2010s. We're going to start where these are in alphabetical order. Angry Birds. Angry Birds was a fad that was very, very hot for a pretty long period of time, and then they even made a movie out of it. They made an Angry Birds movie, and here's what's weird, what's crazy. There's a sequel on the way, and the first one was terrible. The first Angry Birds movie was terrible. I guess it made enough money to justify a sequel, but it's a mobile game, and it's from Finland, and people became obsessed with it, and yeah. How about bottle flipping? This is the sport of flipping a partially filled plastic water bottle and trying to make it land upright. There are videos of that all over the internet as well.
Yeah, Subway used that in one of their commercials.
Yeah. How about this? The cash mobs. This is a form of flash mobs where a group of people assemble at local businesses to buy things to support their local businesses and community. How about cupcake stores? Fueled by the growing popularity of cupcakes in the 2000s, cupcake reality shows like Cupcake Wars and Cupcake Girls, cupcake stores started appearing in major cities throughout the U.S. You seen the latest cupcake sort of related commercial? I think it's for a web company or a phone company or something like that. And it's two professional football players, real NFL players.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who actually have?
Yeah, from the Titans. I forget their name.
Yeah, so they actually have a cupcake store.
Yeah.
So that's how big it is. How about dabbing? It's a simple dance move of triumph or playfulness where a person drops their head into a bent crook of a slanted arm while raising their opposite arm in a parallel direction. Both arms are pointed to the side in an upwards angle. Here's another one. Dog shaming. It's a mobile app similar... it's not a mobile app. It's an internet meme where a dog owner creates a sign to describe the bad thing that the dog has done. Like, I chewed on the pillow. And takes a photo of the dog wearing the sign and or putting it next to the phone and then posts it online. I think those are funny. I think those are pretty funny. Dog shaming. Dubstep. Oh, there we go. A type of electronic dance music that originated in London in the late 90s, but it did not enter the mainstream until 2010 when American dubstep producer Skrillex achieved commercial success. Duck Dynasty. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that's self-explanatory. We have fidget spinners. Those are pocket-sized metal spinning toys. Is that still a thing? I mean, I know it was really hot and really popular for a while, and it was everywhere, but I haven't really heard about it that much.
Yeah, I feel like it faded off for like 6 months.
What was funny was Alex Moffitt plays... Eric Trump, and Mikey Day plays Don Jr. And they're both very funny as the Trump brothers. But Alex Moffitt plays Eric Trump as perhaps the thickest and dumbest person on the planet. And at one point they appear on Weekend Update, is usually what they do. They come on Weekend Update and do a segment. And at one point, in order to occupy Eric, Don Jr. gives him a fidget spinner. And there's a moment where he spins the fidget spinner and just stares at it with his eyes wide open. It was absolutely hilarious to see how he acted, you know, with the fidget spinner. Here we go. 50 Shades of Grey, R-rated romance novel published in 2011, became a huge fad and a huge thing. Ended up making three movies around it. Here's one, food trucks. I love this fad, and I hope it doesn't go away. A way for the on-the-go person to grab a quick bite at a low cost. Most major cities have dozens of food trucks parked throughout the downtown area, offering gourmet burgers and lobster rolls, tacos, desserts, and much more. I love that fad.
Food trucks?
Food trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. And I love the show on...
The food truck race?
Food truck race. Yeah. Yeah, I love that show. Love that show. Tyler Florence is the host.
Yeah.
How about Gangnam Style? that was a fad that last. That was a short one, right? Because that was like this guy came in, was huge, was everywhere, and then like now. I mean, now it's just a footnote. It's like a punchline.
Yeah.
It was a punchline then too, kind of, but people loved it. That was a song that was released. In 2012. God, was it really that long ago? It was 7 years ago that song was released?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Grumpy Cat. Oh, yeah, you don't see Grumpy Cat very often anymore. But I love Grumpy Cat. I love Grumpy Cat. I love all the memes. I love all the stuff. I thought the movie with Aubrey Plaza, when she with the Christmas movie, the Aubrey Plaza that did the voice for Grumpy Cat, I thought that was cool. I'm a big fan of Grumpy Cat. I wish Grumpy Cat would make a comeback. It's been a few years since Grumpy Cat has shown up. I mean, she was all over the internet for a really long time.
Yeah,
you know. But and the cat, I think the cat's adorable. I think Grumpy Cat's adorable. No, that's like the. here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hey, hi, Nick. I enjoy your show every morning.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention the Hacky Sack. We're about the same age. You got to remember the Hacky Sack.
Yeah, Hacky Sack was popular in the, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I graduated high school in 83. They were Hacky Sacking then. So.
Yeah, it was. I think it reached its zenith right around the late 80s, early 90s. And
just another one of those. It was just kind of idiotic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But everybody had one.
Everybody was doing it. Everybody was doing it, especially at Dave Matthews concerts. That was where you'd see a lot of those. All right, Tom, thanks.
All right, have a good day.
All right, buddy. Yep. Yeah, speaking as a Dave Matthews fan, by the way. I'm a huge Dave Matthews fan. Seen them like over 30 times. I've seen Dave.
Oh, wow.
And, it's Hacky Sack in the parking lot when people are tailgating, you know, drinking beer, doing the Hacky Sack thing, even though, like, Hacky Sack reached its popularity, like, 20 years ago. Reached the height of its popularity. how about Honey Boo Boo?
All right, we could skip that one.
Jersey Shore. There's another one right there. We've mentioned, here's one. The Selfie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the selfie.
That's a really good point that you don't think about. But
no, that's a fad, but it's here to stay. I mean, and everybody does it. Everybody takes selfies now. Not a fan of the selfie, quite frankly. Oh, here's one. How about this? The shake weight. By the way, you know, a few months ago, there's a table in a little small conference table with some computers at it right outside my office, right outside the door of my office. And sometimes it's like a free table and they leave some stuff on it, like if you have some stuff that, you know, that was given to you and you just want to leave it out, like if you got t-shirts or something that you got, you just leave it out on the free table and anybody who works here at the station can just come by and grab one for free. So one morning I come into work. And I walk in, I check into my office, and I get my stuff that I need to bring to the studio to set up the studio. And I walk in, and I walk out of my office. And you have to understand, here's the thing about what's unique about our offices here at the station, and what I love about them, is that we have sliding glass doors. So we can see outside into the hallway, and you can see inside into the office from the outside. They're just ceiling-to-floor length doors with a big handle that you can slide, and they're all glass. They're all made of glass. So you can see what's going on outside. So I walk into the office, I get my stuff, and I look out through the door, and I see something on the free table, you know, on the little table right outside. I open up the door and I walk in there, and it was a clearly very used shake weight that was sitting on the table, and I was like, "Who?" Because you could see there was like wear and tear on it, and it was clearly a used shake weight that somebody left on the free table. Like, who the hell is going to take a used shake weight? Like, what were they using this shake weight for that it looks like it looked?
I want to know who dropped it off.
I don't know. I have no idea. But all I know is that at one point, right outside the office there, right outside my office, on the free table, was a used shake weight. And then the scary part is it wasn't
somebody
there. It wasn't there the
it.
Next day. It was only there for a full like day. And it wasn't there the next day. So I don't know. Somebody said, "Hey, look, it's a shake weight. It's been used, but I'm going to take it."
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here fairly regularly during the week.
It may have been there.
I didn't even see it.
May have been there 2 days. May have been there two days. But I just was like, why is there a weathered shake weight on the free table outside my office? I don't understand. And who would take it? So anyway.
I love, we were talking Ragnarok earlier.
Yeah.
I just love the scene when he, at the very beginning, and I'm going to go blank on the actor's name. He's
Mark Ruffalo?
No. He plays Sklar. The at the very beginning.
Yeah.
When he's showing the girls his stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And he's sitting there with the shake weight.
Yeah. Yeah, shake weight. So there you go. There's another fad, the shake weight. Fads, everybody, 312-981-7200. We're going back in time and talking about some fads, some crazy fads that maybe you participated in, and we want to hear about those. Either talk or text at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Also coming up, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And the stories that matter from Vic Vaughn in the the Northwestern Medicine newsroom right here on WGN. Okay. We are talking about fads and ones that we all participated in, ones that were really big. And we're going back in time. We did the 2010s. Now we're going to bust into the 2000s, and we're going to go back in time discussing talking about some fads. And we want to hear from you. Which ones do you remember? Which ones were you a part of? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Jimbo sends in a text that says, how about cup stacking? My kids were into it for a while. That's true. The old cup stacking. Good morning. Grumpy Cat has a weather app, and I love it. That's from Aileen. Grumpy Cat has a weather app. It's probably always bad weather, too. No matter what. If it's sunny and 73 degrees outside, it's still going to be grumpy and bad. Wilvetta says that the Tamagotchi virtual pet. Yeah, those virtual pets were popular in the late 90s. I remember that those were really big in the late 90s, the Tamagotchi and all the other weird virtual pets. All right, we're going back to the 2000s here. Auto tune, now that's everywhere. And that's a thing that started to get very, very popular in the 2000s. Bratz, a group of teenage fashion dolls with large heads and skinny bodies, spin-offs of spin-offs such as the Bratz Kids and Bratz Babies soon followed. Bratz characters were commercial in movies, TV, music, albums, and video games. Oh, here's one. Crocs. Colorful plastic clog/shoes with holes in them, popular for their comfort because they're easy to wear. Slip on like a sandal. Mario Batali still wears them.
They're still really big in the food service industry.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're really comfortable. And, yeah. You know, in the food service industry, you're on your feet for like 12, 13 hours a night.
Well, it's more the non-stick, or I forget what they call it. It's the specific footwear.
Yeah.
The non-slip stuff.
So in the kitchen when something spills or something, you don't
have to worry about it. Yeah, it's required.
Yeah. How about this? DVD and TV monitors in cars. That started to get very popular in 2000. Yeah. Now it's just a regular part of the car.
Yeah.
It's a regular feature. Here's one. Emo.
Not Phillips.
No, not Phillips. He's timeless. He's not a fad. Emo Phillips is not a fad. He's forever. But no, the music movement of emo and the look and all that stuff. Emo. That's still a thing, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? There are a couple bands out there now, cover bands out there, that are just emo cover bands.
And they just do emo in that genre of music.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is emo is different than goth? I mean, goth was an 80s thing. And, well, I mean, still around, but 80s and 90s. Goth was 80s mostly. And 90s, you know, bands like The Cure and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's still, there are people who still go through that, wear the black eye makeup and all the, and dress in black and black lipstick and all that stuff. So, here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick. Hey, hilarious you mention it. As we speak, I'm wearing my orange Mario Batali Crocs. And I have two pairs. I have one labeled outside and inside, so my wife doesn't get mad at me when I wear them outside.
Oh, I
see. They're incredibly comfortable, and Mario was cool. He got in some trouble there. But,
he did, yes.
Yeah. But a few popped into my head. Fashion, over spanning the decades, fashion-wise, when I was like in junior high school, and I think I'm about the same age as you, we had to have designer jeans, like Jordaches or something.
Oh, yeah. No, that's totally high school for me. That is
right,
the girls were.
Yeah, junior high or early high school, you had to have them, and now they're hideous. Now we got to wear Levi's again.
Yeah. Well, the designer jeans, all the girls wore the designer jeans. They were very, very tight. And there were Glory Vanderbilt. There was
Calvin Klein.
All of those. But like, seriously, that was the look for the ladies in when I went to high school.
Well,
very, very tight.
Them too, which is scary.
Yeah, I didn't wear them. I never wore them.
I had one pair because everybody else had. And then with those, you usually had to have an Izod shirt with the the polo shirt with the lizard on it, or the alligator, or whatever.
Right.
You had to have one of those. And then going a little bit forward or backwards, I don't know, you had to have a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, well, that was a huge fad in the 80s. Huge.
I can still actually solve it, and everybody thought I was like some sort of genius. I'm like, no, I went to the drugstore and I bought a book.
Here's how I solve it. I take the stickers off.
Take the stickers off.
And I put them solid on all four sides. That's how I solve
it. That's right. And then the last one is more recent. It seems to have gone away, but the kids, like, now we're talking like within the last 10 years, the kids were playing that Cups game.
Yeah, we just mentioned that one.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
where you stack cups and unstack them, and that was bizarre because it was really, they were showing on TV and stuff, and they clearly had very good hand-eye coordination. And it's like, if you have that good hand-eye coordination, why don't you pick up a baseball or basketball? Because I don't think you're going to make it on the cup circuit.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not going to be a big cup circuit out there. Yeah,
no, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Kerry, thanks, man.
Thanks, Nick.
Take care. Bye. By the way, that cups thing is now forever going to be associated with Anna Kendrick.
Oh, yeah, completely.
I mean, just, you know, the whole, you know, and the cup thing that she does. So, and she does it very, very well.
I mean, the song's name is Cups.
Yeah. I mean, it's seriously, she's associated with that. She's forever going to be associated with that. So, all right, let's take a break here. And we were talking about fads. What were the weirdest? What were the worst? What were ones that you were a part of? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we're here, and we've got a Blackhawks Express to play. They did lose. Their seven-game winning streak came to an end, and they lost to the Bruins, and we'll play back the Express coming up later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we're talking about fads from the past and going through from decades here, and we would love to hear from you what fads were the worst or the best or that you remember that maybe you participated in. 312-981-7200. Now, what was the reason you played that, Ben? I can't hear you.
Oh, there we go.
There it is.
All right, I was previewing stuff for later.
Okay, well, tell everybody what it is.
Oh, for the song?
Yeah.
That was Canned Heat by Jamiroquai, and that was as heard and popular in Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I completely forgot about that. You know why? Because I hate that movie.
I know a lot of people that
I only
did.
Saw it one time. I saw it the one time, and I totally forgot about it. But, yeah, Napoleon Dynamite, that was a fad.
It was huge.
Yeah, everybody was talking like him. Vote for Pedro t-shirts were everywhere and all that stuff.
Everybody was eating tots.
And I was in the minority on that one, I think, because there was a big cult following for that movie. And, I mean, a lot of my friends really loved it. I just, it drove me nuts.
I was off and on.
Yeah, it drove me nuts. But anyway, those are fads. Napoleon Dynamite being one of them, a movie fad. So that's what we're talking about. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to mention about Pokemon Go.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people played that. That was popular for, I mean, that was probably popular for about what? But 6 months, maybe?
Yeah, probably. I was cracking up about it one night. My friend and I were out in Crown Point, Indiana. It was a Friday night. It was a beautiful night. Everybody was out. But everybody was, we were cracking up watching these people. There were couples with baby, with strollers and had their babies, and they were, but they were, you had to watch out for them. They because they couldn't watch out for themselves. They were all on their phones.
Right. Everybody was looking for Pokemon on their phones, yeah. And it was a huge, huge fad for about six months.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I hate to mention this because I know it's way back. But remember, I don't know if anybody remembers when they packed Volkswagen Bugs.
Yes.
And telephone booths.
Right. Yeah. Those were college stunts. That was like it was like eating goldfish. That was one of the things that you would do to pledge to get into a fraternity or something. Jam as many people as you can into phone booths or Volkswagens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Tom. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Take care. Pokemon Go. One of my favorite stories. With that phenomenon, and I just was I didn't understand it. I never played it. I don't I don't have the app. I don't know any of it. But one of our favorites, we do a segment here on Friday mornings called You Big Dummy. And we had several during that time of those months when everybody was doing the Pokemon, we had several dummy stories of people who were walking into walls or falling down manholes while they were playing Pokemon or getting. So, but the best one was there was a police car cam somebody was filming. And a car was driving down the street, going down the street, and they ended up sideswiping. Nobody got hurt, but they ended up sideswiping the cop car.
Oh, wow!
And so the cops went after him. They sideswiped the cop car, and then they stopped. It's not like they hit and run, but they eventually stopped. And the cops all this was on film. And the cops get up to the car, and the guy gets out of the car, and he was playing Pokemon Go. In the car while he was driving. He was playing Pokemon Go in the car while he was driving. And, so they obviously he got a ticket. He got, he got fined. Obviously the damage to the police car was not good and all that stuff. And this is what he said. He gets out of the car and, and the cops are up to talk to him. And he's like, are you all right? We want to make sure. Because the cops did want to make sure that everybody was okay. Because there were a couple of people in the car. Mm-hmm. They wanted to make sure that everybody was okay. And they asked the guy, what were you doing? He said, and he had his phone and he put his phone down. And he's all depressed, and then he goes, man, that's what I get for playing this dumbass game. That was his quote. That was one of my favorite. All right, a few more from the 2000s here. How about grills in the hip-hop community? Grills are pretty big. iPods. Remember when iPods were, like, the biggest thing? I mean, they still are, obviously, but, there was that time. How about low-rise jeans? Yeah, there was a period of time when the low-rise jeans thing was so... That was in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, you can thank people like Britney Spears for that. It was like the tops were getting higher and the pants were getting lower in that time. How about the Livestrong wristband? You remember the yellow Livestrong wristbands for Lance Armstrong? I had one. I did. I had one. Here's one, MySpace. Do you have a MySpace page?
I did.
Yep, so did I.
And it's still, actually, we came up at my other job the 2 weeks ago.
The MySpace came up?
Yeah. Yeah, because we were talking about where social media has gone.
Oh, yeah.
And so just for fun, I went to MySpace, and my account's still there. I couldn't remember the password, so I had to request a new one, but I was still able to log in.
Wow, I'd like to go back and see if my account is still there. I mean, I never closed it out.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's still there. And then, with Tom looking over his shoulder at you.
Yep.
He was always your first friend. then you would rank your friends on Facebook. Or not on Facebook, on MySpace.
Yep.
So, Razor scooters, the Segway, sleeved blanket, or of course, the Snuggie, which is what we're talking about here. The Snuggie was big. Texas Hold'em poker. Remember when that was just like the celebrity poker? Texas Hold'em poker was just like everybody watched it. There were like 10 different poker shows on television. Everybody played it. So, all right, let's see what we got for the 90s. Let's go back to the 90s and see what we got here. 312-981-7200. Beanie Babies. Oh, my God, Beanie Babies. Huge. Everybody had Beanie Babies. Everybody thought that they were going to get rich by collecting Beanie Babies. And that was a huge fad. For a pretty long period of time. I think that lasted some time. That lasted a pretty long period of time, the Beanie Baby thing. And then it just faded out. Boy bands. Oh, that's still a thing, man. Except now, it's Korean boy bands. It's the K-pop stuff.
Yeah, but you notice how some of these bands are doing reunion tours? You know?
Oh, sure. Like, well, Backstreet Boys were on a commercial with Common. Or not, yeah. Common, I'm sorry, Chance.
Oh, yeah.
Chance,
yeah.
The Rapper. It was a big Super Bowl commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on a comeback tour, those guys.
Yeah, how many comeback tours in the last couple of years has New Kids done?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. No, they're still, that's still a thing. Yeah. I mean, obviously in the 90s it was massive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was massive. How about the Budweiser "What's Up" commercial?
Oh yeah,
everybody was saying "What's Up."
I'll say for the longest, I mean, for that whole decade, just Budweiser commercials,
yeah.
Super Bowl commercials.
Well, yeah, the frogs and the
year.
Frogs too.
Yeah.
All right, fanny packs. That's one of the most.
Oh.
Those are so ridiculous. I directed this play. I co-wrote and directed this play called "Black and Blue."
Uh huh.
And it all took place in a bar, and it was about these two brothers. One a hardcore Sox fan and one a hardcore Cubs fan. And the play took place over a course of a bunch of years while they were watching an interleague game between the Cubs and Sox in the bar, in their dad's bar. Their dad owns the bar.
Oh, okay.
So that was the setup for the play. And at one point, we had a whole bunch of... we had some people on stage who were supposed to be people from New York who were screaming and cheering on the Cubs, even though they're from New York. And so they end up having like a little funny confrontation between them, these people from New York and the two brothers. And one of the guys and this play, by the way, I should say this play, it went up in 2011, and then we remounted it in 2013. So it was pretty recent. So,
okay.
So 2011. So we had... And they were sitting at a table, like a waist high table, like a, you know, in a bar, obviously, on the set. And so one of the guys is talking, another guy is talking, and then they finally, one of the brothers asks them for their ID because they say they're from New York, but they want to see where they're really from. Like they're not, you guys don't, they don't live, and these guys clearly don't live in Manhattan or anything like that. So he wants to see their IDs and to see where they're really from. And so so he's doing it to one guy. One guy looks at the ID, and he's not from Manhattan. He's from, you know, like a, you know, like a suburb or a different, you know, he's not even from a borough, you know. And so the last guy who stands up, when he stands up to get his ID, he stands up and reveals that he's wearing a fanny pack. And it got a laugh every single night. And it was like he had the fanny pack, and that was where he kept his ID. So he had to stand up and unzip his fanny pack to get his ID. And the fanny pack, because it was a visual reveal, so I had him stand, I had him make sure that it was hidden. You know, during the scene, I directed it, so I'd, like, make sure you don't show that, you don't tip your hand that you're wearing a fanny pack. Make sure that that's a reveal when you stand up to get the ID. And it got a laugh every single night. And the fanny pack was my costume designer's idea. It wasn't in the script. It was so, you know, the costume designer was like, he should wear a fanny pack, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's hilarious. And the guy playing the actor playing him was kind of, you know, he actually played him very whiny, like you know, like that. And so the combination of the way this character was portrayed and the reveal of the fanny pack was hilarious, and it got a huge laugh every night. I would always, you know, I would come and watch the show a bunch of times because I really loved the show and I loved watching the actors do this stuff. And every night I'd be like, man, I hope the fanny pack gag gets a laugh. I hope it gets a laugh every single night. Huge laugh. So fanny packs are funny. That's all I'm saying. Oh, yeah. They're funny. Have you ever seen the picture of The Rock from the 90s? Where he's wearing a turtleneck, big turtleneck sweater with a gold chain around the turtleneck.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
a fanny pack.
Uh-huh.
And a fanny pack. It's one of the funniest pictures of The Rock you'll ever see. If you Google The Rock or Dwayne Johnson fanny pack, you could look at that picture because it's absolutely hilarious.
A buddy of mine plays in a metal band, mm-hmm. like a heavy metal band and they're taking off now. They're doing albums and all this stuff. But every night he performs, he's got a fanny pack on. It's amazing because he has gone out to the internet and found all these different ones for different, you know,
different styles of fanny packs.
Yeah,
maybe the fanny pack is making a comeback. Who knows? All right, let's take a break. We're talking about fads from the present to the past, and we get to some more ridiculous ones. 312-981-7200. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m. And it's Wednesday morning. Hope you guys have a great day today. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we are talking about fads, and we're going back decade by decade, talking about some of the fads that were stupid and some were weird, some that we even participated in. Maybe we're a little embarrassed by that, but anyway, so it's crazy fads that we're talking about. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about now in the decade of the 90s. What were some of the fads in the 90s? And we were just talking about fanny packs. And so there you go. How about the Furby? That creepy little Furby fur doll that had a mind of its own. It was an interactive furry creature. It had its own language, and it communicated with other Furbies. And it was so popular, again, the Furby was so popular that it was sold out at Christmas and stuff. One of the first things I remember being very popular on the internet was someone did an autopsy on a Furby. Like, they posted this thing where it was like a quote-unquote autopsy on the Furby. And they cut it open, you see what's inside the Furby, and while they were doing it, the Furby was talking and his eyes were moving. I just remember that being like one of the first things that everybody was kind of sharing on the internet that I remember. How about this grunge? You want to talk about the 90s grunge? Yeah, I was full on grunge. I had really long hair. I wore the flannels. Had the Docs, the Doc Martens. Yeah. Full on grunge. Napster. Oh, boy, Napster. Napster, that's... it's really funny. What's the guy's name? Sean... Who's the guy who founded Napster? Sean... I can't remember his name. The founder of Napster is Sean something, and I can't remember his last name. I always forget it. But what's amazing...
Sean Parker.
Okay, yeah. So Sean Parker was the founder of Napster, okay? Now, have you ever seen what Sean Parker looks like?
Yeah.
Kind of a relatively not the most attractive, kind of a pudgy dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justin Timberlake played him in The Social Network. So
yeah.
He should send a thank you note to David Fincher saying, oh, hey, thanks for casting Justin Timberlake as me. Justin Timberlake plays him in the movie, and I'm sure he went to see the movie like 50 times and said, look at that, Justin Timberlake is playing me. I look like that in the movie. How about Pogs? There. Alf is back in Pog form. That's Milhouse from The Simpsons. Rollerblades, sagging pants, the Spice Girls, these are all from the 90s. Tattoos. Well, that's not. I mean, that's, that's still a thing. And then, of course, if you can't talk the 90s without Tickle Me Elmo. Tickle Me Elmo was just huge. I mean, not, you know, not like the Furby, but bigger, like 10 times bigger. Tickle Me Elmo. You couldn't get a Tickle Me Elmo doll, and it was massively successful and huge. All right, we got some phone calls here. We're talking about fads here on WGN. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello. In around 1979, there was this huge popularity of backgammon, and you get these little backgammon sets that look like miniature briefcases, and you go to the bar and hang out at bars and play backgammon with people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily. Well, I wasn't old enough to go to bars, but we did play backgammon at home, and we did have one of those fold up backgammon sets as well.
And here's another real quick one from the like 1981, 82. I don't know if this was popular everywhere, but around where I was, if you could get your hands on some hospital scrubs, people would just wear scrubs as regular apparel.
Yeah. My buddy Bob, my best buddy in high school wore hospital scrubs every day. Like in high school, he wore them all the time. No, you're absolutely right. I had some scrubs too that I wore, but not. It would just be the top scrubs. It wouldn't be the scrub pants. It would just be like a pair of jeans with a scrub with the scrubs shirt. Yeah, that was a popular thing. You're absolutely right. All right, John, thanks.
Thanks.
Yep. Have you seen Rushmore?
Yeah.
These are OR scrubs. Oh, are they? And then Bill Murray does the spit take. I love that movie. Here's Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Yeah, listen, I don't know if you ever saw it, but you know about the pet rock because you said you got one, and it used to be in a box like a caged animal.
Right.
Well, one day I walked into the store, and this is a couple of years after the pet rock, and they were selling pet sticks.
It did not go over as big as the pet rock.
I know, it went out right away almost.
Yeah, but I do remember the attempt to repeat that success by doing the pet stick, and it just people weren't buying that.
Right, I got a kick out of that though, because I thought it was bad enough with the rock, but I said, "My God, you're spending money on a stick."
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, anyway, just thought I'd mention that.
All right, okay. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Take care.
Again, 70s. Weed, drugs, all that stuff was happening, and which explains the pet rock, explains why people would buy it, and explains someone trying to sell a pet stick. All right. We are going to take a break for the news, and then we'll talk more about fads. And we're going back to the 80s now. When we come back, we'll go back to the 80s with some fads after the news, which is up next.
We can dance if we want to, we can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine.
Yeah.
We can go where we want to, they will never find.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio, that's me. We are here live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We are talking about fads, and we're going into the 80s now. With fads, and that of course was Safety Dance, from the One Hit Wonders, Men Without Hats. that's what we're talking about, some fads, and we're doing the 80s here. In just a few minutes, we're going to play back the Blackhawks Express from last night's game. And if you want to join us with your thoughts on fads, 312-981-7200, talk and text. 630 area code says Grumpy Cat still has an active a Facebook page. I'm friends with Grumpy Cat on Facebook. Let's see. Trevor from Antioch says, in the late 90s, early 2000s, my pants were never less than 32 inches at the bottom. Another person, 210, says planking. 773 says yo-yos, crazy bones, starter jackets, and pagers. Yeah, pagers. Yo-yos. That was a really popular one. That was in the 70s, though, because I was a yo-yo nut. I had a bunch of yo-yos when I was a kid. And I was pretty good, too. I probably can't do any of the tricks that I used to be able to do when I was younger, but because I haven't picked up a yo-yo in years, but I was one of those dorks who had a bunch of yo-yos and could do, like, tricks with them. Tim, of course, votes for Beanie Babies as being the craziest. Leg warmers. Oh, yeah. That's the 80s. I'm sure we'll get to that here. Hair bands, another 80s thing. Women who wore pantyhose when they worked out. Yeah. Parachute pants. Oh, yes, the fantastic fashion. Some of the worst ones are the fashion ones. Those are some of the most embarrassing ones. You know, parachute pants, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Fanny packs, that kind of stuff. And a lot of us have, like, really, you know, ridiculous pictures. There's some blackmail kind of pictures that are available of me in the 80s. I looked like a moron in the 80s. I went through every kind of weird hairstyle you could have. I had the spiked hair with it real short on the side.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I had a rat tail. I had the rat tail. Yeah, 80s were bad. The 80s were bad. But hair-wise, I was challenged big time in the 80s. Now I just let my hair grow because I'm lazy, and my hair's getting long now.
You know, I remember, and I know we're moving through the 80s now, but I was one of those poor souls that wore the overall shorts in the 90s.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Were you only hooked one of them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 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 Okay. For the 80s, we've got boom boxes. And, of course, big hair with lots of hairspray. Breakdancing. You can't talk 80s fads without mentioning the Cabbage Patch Dolls. And if anybody was around in, like, 1983-ish, the popularity and the insanity of the Cabbage Patch phenomenon was nuts. Nuts. I had a friend who worked at the department store Venture back in when the Cabbage Patch days, and he said that they got a batch of Cabbage Patch in because they couldn't keep them off the shelf. Mm-hmm. They got a batch of the Cabbage Patch dolls in, and people, when they unlocked the doors, people ran through the store to get to the toy department, and they beat the hell out of each other. He saw women fighting each other, like, just to get a Cabbage Patch doll.
I still have mine.
Do you?
Yeah.
We had one.
They always had goofy names, too.
Yeah, I don't even remember. It's amazing to me how popular those things were. I mean, Care Bears.
Oh.
That's from the 80s. How about, why is this just the 80s? Converse All-Stars. I have a pair on right now. That's the only kind of shoe I wear.
I was going to say, if it wasn't snowing out, I'd be wearing mine.
I am wearing mine.
Oh, yeah.
wearing mine. These popular sneakers are still worn today, but not nearly as much as they were in the 80s. Sometimes called Chucks or Chuck Taylors, these shoes came in many colors and high top or low top options. I'm a high top man, by the way. My All-Stars are, my Chucks are always high top.
Mine are lows.
We got denim jackets.
Bedazzled or non-bedazzled?
Yeah, that's the question. Oh. Goatee beards, those are still pretty popular.
Yeah.
Versus
the soul patch, though. Patch, that was, yeah.
Horror movies. Well, okay, I guess that there was a resurgence in popularity in the 80s of horror movies because of the slasher genre, and you got your Nightmare on Elm Street movies and all that stuff. Those were very popular. The slasher genre really, really did take off in the 80s. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, in my world, horror movies have always been popular. That's just me. So, let's see. How about He-Man?
Masters of the Universe.
People love those things. Lace fingerless gloves. Thank you, Madonna. Yeah, the whole Madonna look was massive in the 80s.
Yeah, with the jellies bracelets and all that
all
stuff.
That stuff. Yeah. All of that stuff. How about the koosh ball?
You know, those things are highly flammable.
Oh, well, why would you know that?
I was at Woodfield Mall when there was an incident, and I don't remember. I think it was like the Discovery Store or something back then when that would sell them. And it was too close to the Bunsen burner flame thing they had going at the store. And that thing lit up.
Well, I'll tell you what. In the 90s, they made a comeback because of Rosie O'Donnell. Because she would shoot them out into the audience.
Oh, yeah.
How about this? Miami Vice fashion. Oh, man. That was everywhere.
Don Johnson.
The pastel colors, yeah, with just the T-shirt and the jacket with the, yep, with the sleeves rolled up.
It's what I wear to every 80s party I go to.
Yeah. The mullet hairstyle. I had a mullet. I'm telling you, I had every kind of... Let me tell you something. You know, in the 80s, Bono had a mullet, which means it was cool. And he had a spectacular mullet. Like, if you go back and you look at the Live Aid footage, like right around the time Unforgettable Fire came out, one of the biggest, like a massive mullet. And like at that time, you know, and still to this day, Bono is considered one of the coolest and greatest frontmen in rock. And so people want to emulate his look and stuff. So lots of people had mullets. It wasn't just like, you know, they have the reputation of it being like a dumb sort of maybe regional thing, but it wasn't, man. When Bono has a mullet, it's considered cool. That's the way it goes. So, let's see. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Nick. Good
morning.
Did you ever wear Zubaz pants?
I did not, but a lot of my friends did. I had a guy who was a football. One of my buddies was a football player. Like, and he played semi pro football. Wore them all the time.
And one more hair fashion style. Did you ever go with a perm in the 80s?
A perm? No. I didn't. I never did perm my hair. I will say that. That is the one nightmare hairstyle that I did not sport in the 80s. But I did all the rest of the stupid things, though.
So somewhere there's a picture of me in a shoebox wearing Zubaz pants with a perm.
Oh, that's fantastic. Proud. That's fantastic.
Have a great day.
All right, Chris. Take care. Bye.
She will kill me for this, but my sister, right around fourth grade, rocked the perm.
Oh, did she?
Oh, yeah, and I've got the photographic evidence.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, man. People do take photos from those time periods, let me tell you. Mary. Mary wants to jump in here. Hi, Mary.
Oh.
Did you ever have a perm?
I had a perm for probably like 15 years.
Oh, come on, really?
But it was like they called it a body wave.
Oh, right, remember? Right.
So you went in and you said, I want a body wave. I don't want a perm. Because if you got a perm, I mean, you got a perm.
You're right.
You know, and I didn't want kinky curls. But
right.
I had a body wave so that I could style my, I could do the feather thing.
Oh, sure.
Style. But my big mistake in the late 80s, I think, yeah, because I had just had my second child.
Mm-hmm.
I did the Demi Moore ghost haircut.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh,
it
man.
It was so short and terrible. And I just recently was finding some of my old headshots.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled them out and I was showing them to my kids. And they're like, Mom, you had the worst hairdo ever. I mean, I went from, you know, the shag to the perm,
yeah,
to the ghost to the...
Yeah,
I don't know what I was thinking.
I had horrendous hair in the 80s. Horrendous hair, Mary. It was just ridiculous. I had the mullet. I had the spiked hair. I had the rat tail, which was a real good look.
Yeah, guys had a lot of weird ones.
Oh, yeah.
But my husband had a perm. I mean, guys got perms all the time.
I know.
My brother had one. My husband had one.
Yeah.
We were rocking.
Very popular. Were you into any other fads, Mary?
Oh, wow. I mean, I've been through so many with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were talking about all the... Beanie Babies, Cabbage Patch,
yeah,
all the Power Ranger stuff. That
was huge
yeah,
with my sons. I don't know. There's just so many.
A lot. Well, here's the thing that we're going to... Pet
Rocks and all that.
We're, Mary, you and I are pretty close in age. And,
right.
When after we play the Blackhawks Express, we're going to dive into the 70s. And
man.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
This is getting bad.
Yeah, it's real bad. All right, let's take a break. We got weather here. Thanks, Mayor. We got weather here, and we'll jump into that. And then we got the Blackhawks Express. And after the Blackhawks Express, it's time to dive into the fads of the 1970s. And I don't think it's going to be pretty.
Chicago Blackhawks go for 8 straight wins and a little revenge tonight here in Boston in another Original Six battle with the always tough Bruins, who at 11-3-4 in their last 18 games have been playing some of their best hockey of the season. Included in that run was a win over the Hawks in the Winter Classic on January 1 down at Notre Dame Stadium. So the Blackhawks are looking for revenge and the points. Now Strome along the left four talk zone, made a ring wide pass, here's to bring it over the Bruin line, a toe drag and a shot, he scores! This one full took a rasp. Rask went out to make the save down in the butterfly position, but it got caught up in his equipment and rolled through him and into the back of the Bruin net. With 15:38 left in period number one, the Hawks lead the Bruins 1-0. And Jake DeBrusk right corner. De Bergeron, top of the right wing circle, turning off of a check, fed it across, and a shot from the left circle. They score. David Krejci waiting, took that pass that went across the rink from Bergeron, and he slapped it in behind Colin Delia. It's a power play goal, and the Bruins have tied it at one. And here come the Bruins on the attack. Bergeron into the Hawks zone with the left wing board. Sets up Char, deep slot to the front of the net. They score! It's Danton Heinen who found a loose puck after Chara from the left point fired the puck in front of the Hawk net. That looked more like a pass than a shot. Marchand caught it on the blade of his stick, but it bounced off. But Heinen was about 3 feet away from Marchand and slapped it in behind Delia. It's 2-1 Boston. Heinen got the puck back right corner. Put it up the boards to Marchand. To Bergeron, high slot. Long shot from there. Turn wide to rebound. Marchand shoots and scores. So Heinen again involved in this goal. This time was able to shovel the puck over to Marchand, who from beside the Hawk net flips it in behind Colin Delia. It's now 3-1 Boston with 1:01 left in the first period. They'll carry the puck down and then put a pass into the high slot. Marchand got it over to Krejci, who set it in front for DeBrusk, and he tips it into the net. He scores. Not going to be a power play goal because Jonathan Toews had just stepped onto the ice surface. As that puck pulls the twine in behind Colin Delia, it's an even string goal, and it's 4-1 in favor of the Bruins. Stone will lose puck between the circles to Cahoon. To Murphy, right point. Sends it left point. Keith, he closes in. Fires! He scores! And this deflects up off the ice. I believe it hit the stick of John Moore in front and deflected past Tuukka Rask with 22 seconds left in period number two. The Hawks get one back. It's Duncan Keith scoring, and it's 4-2 Boston. And Keith through the high slot. He's in there for Keith. Hands it off. Gustafson, right circle, closes in. Shoots! He scores! Eric Gustafson with the sides 4-4. Beats Tuukka Rask over the glove into the back of the Bruin net. And with 15-12 left in the third, the Hawks are making it a hockey game. They trail 4-3. 33 seconds on the Bruin power play. Corey Crew carrying out the center ice. And then over the Hawk line on the right wing. Stopping to the right wing. Puts a pass over to the left wing side. And a beautiful pass by Heinen to Solarik in the slot, and he one-times it past Delia. It's a power play goal, and it's 5-3 Boston. DeBrusk, meanwhile, down the left wing of the Hawk zone. DeMarchand put it in front of the net to Krejci. He shoots and scores. Well, David Krejci needs about maybe 6 inches of net to shoot at, and he'll hit it every time. He needed right there. It's now 6-3 in favor of the Boston Bruins with 4:18 left in the third. Kajula there along with Toews. Now 7 seconds left in the game as they pin the puck against the Dasher. We are going to milk the clock right there. Looks like all the time is wound off the clock. And neither linesman blew the play dead on a frozen puck. They just let the time wind off the clock. That's the end of the game. The Bruins win it 6-3 here in Boston. They sweep the season series. They won the Winter Classic on January 1st. And here tonight on February 12th, they win the back end. The game here in Boston. Final score, the Bruins 6 and the Hawks 3.
All streaks have to come to an end, and it did last night. So there you go. Hawks play again tomorrow night. They play the Devils, and at the puck drop is at 7:30 right here on WGN. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get back to and wrap this up. We got some ridiculous fads here, and if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, and these are the ones from the 70s. Let's start out with a classic, the 8-track player, one of the dumbest inventions ever. How about this? Daisy Dukes. Those became popular in the 70s because of Dukes of Hazzard. So dashboard hula girls were a thing you could put on your dashboard of your car. Of course, disco, that was a huge thing that was popular in the 70s. Earth shoes were designed to promote a natural and healthier way of walking. Wearing the shoes would result in better posture and help with back pain and breathing. I had a pair of Earth shoes. Hey, how about gee, your hair smells terrific. A fantastic shampoo that was very popular, and I think one of the greatest names ever for a shampoo. Gee, your hair smells terrific. Happy Days was massive in the 70s. Everybody was saying "Hey," and all the catchphrases. Mexican jumping beans. Those are a big thing. Mopeds became very popular in the 70s. Very, very popular. We talked about the pet rock. Platform shoes. Oh, man. Puka shells. They were popularized in Hawaii as well as other surf towns by the surfers. Puka shells were still very popular. Like, again, we mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, hacky sack, and you see that kind of stuff at Dave Matthews shows. You see a lot of puka shells at Dave Matthews shows, too, to this day. The Rocky Horror Picture Show. For well over 25 years, fans have flocked to midnight screenings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The original movie came out in 73, and then it became a cult classic. Sayings like, do your thing, be yourself, do what you want to do. I got a few acres out in the country where I can do my own thing. Laid back, dig it, can you dig it, it feels good. Star Wars action figures. Big in the 70s. Big today. How about this, man? Streakers. Streaking. Only in the 70s would somebody do that. People were streaking everywhere. And at one point, I remember that one of the most famous streakers was the guy who streaked at the Oscars in 1973. And David Niven, who was at the podium at the time, said, and it was, he didn't even react. Like, this dude ran across, put up the peace sign, like was you're apt to do in the 70s as well, 1973. Put up a peace sign, ran across the stage naked at the Oscars, you know. And then David Niven, without missing a beat, as smooth and as debonair and as cool as David Niven was, he just goes, it's hard to believe that a man would strip down to show off his shortcomings. And that just, boom, like that. Didn't even take him. It took him like a millisecond to come up with that line. Streakers. The video game became very popular. Pong started in 1972. And that spawned Atari in 1978. Yeah. And then those little handheld football games and baseball games. The handheld Mattel electronic baseball, Mattel electronic football.
Yeah.
Those were very, very popular. I had those. Those were great.
We got a text from the 815 that just says leisure suits.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Leisure suits. Yeah. And then Trans Am automobiles. The muscle car became popular after the movie Smokey and the Bandit, which starred Burt Reynolds and Sally Field. And then finally, Whizzers. They looked like a top, but you could roll the tip across the floor just to get it spinning and then set it down and watch it go. I had one of those. So, all right. Well, there you go. Some of the crazy fads. The 70s had some weird ones. Everybody had some weird ones. And we all had fashion faux pas. So, there you go. And thank you guys for admitting to your fashion faux pas and your love of these weird fads. So those were some of the crazy fads. So listen, tomorrow is my annual anti-Valentine's Day show. So if you want to participate, I want to hear about all your bad breakups, your heartbreaks, your sad stories. I hate Valentine's Day. Always have, always will. And every year I do an anti-Valentine's Day show. We are going to play sad breakup songs. We're going to talk about completely anti-Valentine's Day movies that are absolutely not romantic and completely opposite as to what you should watch on Valentine's Day. We're going to talk about breakups, celebrity breakups, and we want to hear your stories for the annual anti-Valentine's Day show, which will begin after we speak with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter for his biweekly visit. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk about TV. And there's always a lot of TV to talk about. He hasn't been on. He's actually usually on every couple of weeks, but he was busy last week, couldn't do it. So this is a really, really, really busy time of year for Dan. But we got a lot of TV to catch up on, and a lot of fun to be had with that. Always a good time to talk with Dan. So tomorrow, Dan Feinberg, TV talk, and our annual anti-Valentine's Day show. Get your breakup stories ready and your heartbreak stories ready, and we'll listen to some sad songs and talk about some inappropriate anti-Valentine's Day movies and much, much more.